Hello.
Hey, au revoir.
Au revoir. Bonjour.
Yeah, what's going on?
Hanging out. Just chilling.
Chilling.
Yes.
The cat
How?
next to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's ready to go.
Yeah, he's ready. I guess we can start then.
He's fast asleep and ready to
Did
podcast.
he just eat?
He ate
Does
it a
he eat
few
in the
hours ago.
mornings or in the evenings or both?
Pretty much the both. He sleeps a lot. I guess cats in general sleep 18 hours a day or something
Well, I think
crazy.
dogs do too.
But he's usually active in the evening, the early evening.
He's hunting.
Yeah, he's gotta get out some aggression.
That's right. So, this welcome to Geek Brunch Retrocast number 57.
Oh,
How about that?
I'm glad
I'm
you didn't
Mike.
ask me what the number was.
And with me is Chris. And we
Yes.
never do intros, so at least you know our names now.
Did you say your name?
Yeah. You just didn't hear me.
I blocked it out. Don't want to hear any of that nonsense.
Yeah, who wants? Who cares?
You're a video star
We're
now.
just voices. Yeah, video killed the radio star. Did you know
I was just gonna say that, so I'm concerned.
that? Yeah,
You're gonna go all, you're
first
gonna become
video
one of
to
those.
premiere on MTV. Video killed the radio star.
You're gonna become one of those YouTube stars with 100,000 followers. Just leave me in the dust.
The followers are weird though. Like, I don't know 50 of them. I don't know who. You can't see who's following you on the web. You don't know who these people are. The only people that I know that come out and listen to me really are Kyle, that listens to both our podcasts, Geek Brunch and TC Noise. He listens to all of them.
Yeah, how does that work? The
Like Rob, it's live
Paris.
streaming.
Oh,
So
okay.
you install the Periscope app, and then you just turn it on. You link it to your Twitter account, and whenever you want to say something, you just go live, and you start recording. And then people pop in and out, and they can send you like an IM and ask you a question, or they could hit the screen and you get little hearts, like if they like something you say. It's like a goofy thing, but it's like immediate feedback.
Yeah. So how do you know somebody's going live? It gives you a notification or something?
On Twitter,
Oh, okay.
it sends a notification saying Mike Myers Brunch is live on Periscope.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you start taking your clothes off.
Yeah, and then you start, and then you get like nasty grams saying you can't do that. You can't strip out on live TV, or the Twitter police will be after you.
Oh yeah, Twitter, they police their content really thoroughly.
There is a report function on there, though, for abuse or something like that.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're listening to somebody's broadcast, you can report it, and I guess they'll view it at some point in time and say that you can't say that.
Maybe that's what I'll do then. I'll tune in and
And then report me.
report your nastiness.
But then they'll watch it and say, this isn't nasty.
Yeah. And they'll get mad at me
And
for
then they'll
wasting their
block
time.
you. They'll say, yeah, why did you waste our engineer's time?
Yeah.
Why did you do that? You think it's funny? I'm concerned on my DVDs. I don't have the last episode of Buck Rogers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it doesn't have a side A and side B. And it only has a side A, and I only have one more episode. And there should be two.
After the one for today.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
I might have to watch it on YouTube's. I think they have the episodes on there.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to figure something out.
Either that or it's not, it's just not listed on the DVD. But I know I have Testimony of a Traitor. That's the next
That's the
episode.
next one. Okay.
And then the next one after that is Dorian Secret. And then it's over.
It's all done.
Yeah.
It seems like it's been a while. You know that we've been covering it for a while because of the pace that we do it at.
Yeah.
That's one thing that's crossed my mind when I've thought occasionally about what we'll do next, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'll see something that's like a TV show that's run for a longer period of time, and I'll think, man,
But
we'll be
you could
covering
also
that till we
say, well,
retire.
let's cover the first five or something. You know, you could
Yeah,
limit
that's true. That's true. We don't necessarily have to do
the whole thing.
the whole thing. Wow. Brings a whole new.
Window of opportunity.
Yeah. I'll have to think on that.
Well, do you want to dive into this Buck Rogers?
Yeah, I think I know at least last time, but it feels like it's been a while since we started out with Buck.
Yeah. So this was The Hand of Goral, premiered in March 26, 1981, and it is one of those series like in sci-fi that you always kind of have, right? Like a mind game, like something on the ship is effed up and somebody's playing like mind games with you.
Yeah, they definitely seem to do that quite a bit in Star
Yeah.
Trek.
I think Event Horizon was like that too, if I remember correctly, that sci-fi movie, but there's a lot of stuff like that. Like
Yeah.
somebody on the ship goes wacko or you don't know why or, you know, or somebody's playing mind games. Star Trek did that a lot, right? I think in every in every incarnation they've had something like that.
Yeah.
But that's what this is. They go down to a planet called Vordeeth, and it means something like planet of the death or planet of death.
Yeah.
And they're going to scout it because they have a nuclear reading or whatever that a ship crashed there. So they go to rescue this guy, and this guy looks like a normal guy, and Wilma says, well, I'll take him back to the searcher where as Buck and Hawk stay on the planet and look around and some weird shit happens. Like there's no sound or anything. They notice like weird stuff. And then they go back and the ship's not there and there's just weird stuff that goes on and they have to go back to the searcher only to discover that the Admiral's gone batshit crazy. That part was kind of entertaining. Because
Yeah.
he like lined up his crew and he like picks on this old guy, like he's just he like picks on this old guy. Everybody else is really young, but it's like an ageism thing. He's like, were you monitoring the system? Did you know we veered off course by 2 centimeters? He starts chewing his ass. Send him to the brig. And then he goes on to the next one and he just keeps yelling at people. And Buck and Hawk are like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah. Yeah, he's very different than he normally is, the Admiral, and his kind of right-hand man in this episode. Did you recognize him?
The guy from the insurance commercials?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in another earlier episode. This is
Yeah.
not his first, this is like his third appearance.
I guess he was more prominent in this episode, maybe.
Oh, he was a major character, and the other one, he
Yeah.
was just on the brig, you know, doing comm or something, you know.
Yeah, he was just a person on the
Yeah.
bridge. Dennis Haysbirth is his name.
Yeah, the president on 24.
Yeah. And you're in good hands
With
with
Allstate.
Allstate. So yeah, the searcher is different. Then one of the next things that they find out is that Crichton and Twiggy are basically the opposites of their usual selves.
Crichton's nice, and Twiggy is the opposite. He's
Yeah.
like, you fucking humans.
Like you're, yeah, he's very beleaguered. He's very, just tired of serving humans and just very irritable. He's not as, he doesn't have that superiority thing at, that Crichton does. He's more of just a grunt that's sick of serving humans and feels put upon and, you know, that they're always asking him for favors and never doing him anything, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Crichton is very subservient and happy to think of the humans as his masters and very different. So that at this point they start to hypothesize that they're on a ship of fakes of some sort. And Wilma's with them. They she had gone back to the ship first, and they felt that she also was she also seemed surprised by the way that the Admiral was acting. And so the three of them are together, and they end up getting locked up by the Admiral for trying to enter a part of the ship that they're not allowed to go into, that he has blocked off. And they're not locked up for very long because Wilma comes with the plan to pretend that she needs help, that Buck and Hawk are harassing her. And so the young guy guarding the door, he opens it up and to try to help Wilma, and then it's just a trick, so they take him out and get out pretty easily. But they end up, speaking of Dennis Haysbert, his character's name is Lieutenant Parsons, and they end up confronting him in a hallway. And this is the first time we see a character do this sort of disintegration that happens a lot more in the rest of the episode, where they just sort of flash and disappear into this and leave behind this steaming pile of ash. And this is where Wilma's reaction is really out of character for her. She gets extra upset and very emotional, and she gets up all up on Buck and is
Very
touchy-feely
sexual,
and
yeah, very
yeah,
sexual.
very damsel in distress.
Yeah, that was cool because but Buck Wittich just said, "Why don't we take a pause and just go? Let's just go have some sex over here." That's what he should have done.
That's what you would have done.
But then he would have been having sex with a Chinese man. I
Yeah, either
don't know.
a pile of ash or
A pile of
it's
ash.
yeah, one or the other. Wouldn't he wouldn't have gotten what he was expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in this case, it's a good thing he didn't
Yeah.
act on it.
That
Wilma actually dressed in this episode too, more like her in season one. She wasn't wearing like one of those airmen, like sailor outfits. I don't know if you noticed. It looked more like Colonel Deering's outfit from season one, sort of.
She did have a skirt on, though, didn't she?
No, she had pants. Like when they beamed to the planet, they did.
Oh, because I know later on she definitely had skirt on.
Yeah.
But that might have been the real Wilma only. I don't remember. I just remember
Or the
noticing
fake
her
one.
legs. That at some point she had a skirt on. But, so this, what's interesting and what I thought was cool for Wilma's character is that they, that Buck knows that this isn't, this is what clues him into the fact that Wilma is also a duplicate, because he states that she doesn't frighten easily like that. She's got a more courage than that.
Yeah.
And we find out that Reardon, the pilot that they rescued, has been wandering the ship, the real ship. Wilma, the real Wilma, confronts him, finds him off in a part of the ship that he shouldn't be in, and apparently this is the third time that it's happened. And he tells her, He makes excuses, pretends that he's not really up to anything, that it's just a mistake, or that he's got restless or something. And so she and allows her to lead him back to his quarters. But then at this point, there's this giant green beam that comes out and locks on to the real searcher. And it's actually coming from this temple on the planet that they had found earlier when they were exploring. So this, I think, is where, by this point, Buck and Hawk, they end up getting back to the real searcher, right?
Yeah, that's when they well the beam led them to the planet, and then they find the big bad, and then they go back to the searcher.
Yeah, 'cause Buck and Hawk, they confront, they go into the temple. They
Yeah.
hadn't entered it before, and then that's where they find the guy, the old.
Gorin or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And he's like the protector of that planet, but I don't remember. Like I kind of lost what he was like saying. Like he, why he does what he does.
The long and short of it, I think, was that it was all a test. That he's, and something about he's been around for 10,000
Right,
years.
and he originally was a protector. I remember he said he was assigned to protect the planet, but then he like makes a game out of it, like turns the riddle around, you know. It's like the Riddler.
Yeah, and that's where the episode gets its name from, is he calls himself the Hand of Gorl.
Yeah.
And that's where the name of the episode is. So Reardon, the rescued pilot, he's basically a plant to destroy the ship. And they go to the reactor room, and they only find Parsons there. And he says, that he'd been looking for Reardon, but when they leave, they go outside and run into Parsons outside of the room. And immediately realize that that was a fake inside the reactor room, that Reardon had changed his shape to look like Parsons. That's something that he can do. So they go back in and confront him, and he turns into the Chinese man before he disintegrates. And there's more.
I didn't understand the disintegration though. Like, he disintegrated a lot. Is it the same entity that's just like disintegrating into the air and then he can reform himself later? Because that's what he seemed to like do. Like even in the temple, he disintegrated himself.
Yeah.
That was kind of confusing to me.
Yeah, prior to his final disintegration, I was assuming that it was a that they were entities created by the Force, and when
There was a certain number of them. Is that what you assumed?
I didn't necessarily assume there was a certain number of them, or if there was a limit on how many they could create, but that he would just they would just disintegrate when he had no more use for them. But the last disintegration, when he disintegrates in the reactor room, it had a sense of finality about it. And I don't know that the script made it clear what was any different about it.
Yeah.
But he was saying some
Maybe
things.
it was because he felt they won the game. Do you know what I
Yeah.
mean? Or they completed their task, because it was like I'm going to give you this challenge and very few people, nobody passes it, and all of a sudden I guess they passed their test and maybe he let them be.
Yeah, you could be right, because the sense that I got of his final speech seems to line up with what you're saying. That.
It was an okay episode, because then they rescue the ship and then they have their little. I didn't understand a Goodfellas joke
I didn't
at the
either.
end. What the fuck was that? Man, that just fell flat. It was a joke about Wilma being aggressive, I think, or something like that. But I just didn't get it, and everybody started laughing.
Yeah, and throwing pillows at him and stuff, and it
Yeah.
didn't make any sense. I mean, he was trying to follow up Buck's joke, which did make sense, where he was saying that, he knew Wilma was a fake because she was And you know, he listed a bunch of negative attributes, and obviously joking around. But then,
Yeah.
yeah, what Goodfellow said didn't make any sense. I mean, he was on the ship too. They
Actually, he
thought,
listed positive attributes and said Wilma's not like
or
that.
yeah, the yeah, that's. He said that the fake was warm and friendly,
Yeah,
and yeah, so he
friendly.
knew it wasn't the real Wilma. But that was funny. But yeah, Goodfellows didn't make any sense to me either. He was on the fake ship too, and they thought at first that he was real, but then
They did
he
the mad
was.
scientist thing too. Like they took his character and embellished it a little bit to make it
Yeah.
look like he's not real either.
Yeah, he was more similar than the Admiral. He wasn't as much of an opposite, but then when he was much more defensive and protective of his experiments, and he kind of got nasty once there was anybody was questioning him at all, kind of related to Crichton when they told him that Crichton was acting weird, and Crichton being his creation, he was offended at the idea that Crichton would be any different, that Crichton would be affected by anything.
Yeah.
And there was a cool kind of scene where it was revealed that Buck had figured out that Wilma was a fake, where they had an incident where he could either help her or Buck, and he ends up helping Buck, and that's because he's figured out that Wilma's a fake, and that's when the fake Wilma ends up disintegrating. But yeah, it was, I would say, an average episode for this season.
Yeah, it followed a lot of the tropes of the weird sci-fi episodes where things aren't right on the ship.
Yeah.
People acting strange. I think even the Black Hole, that Disney movie, kind of had that happen where people weren't acting quite right.
I
It's
know
been
one of the
ages since I've seen
reasons.
that.
I know one of the reasons that Star Trek, at least the original series, would do it, would be to save money, because they wouldn't need to build any new sets for the show, for the
It's like
episode.
a mind game thing.
Yeah, they could just use the Enterprise sets, and you know that would balance out their budget for other episodes in the season.
Yeah.
And I think that that's probably true for a lot of television shows. Obviously, it's different from movies. I mean, it's an interesting idea still, but
Yeah.
I think on TV shows they'd occasionally make sure to have scripts that would be less expensive, so they could meet their budget.
Yeah. The other thing I noticed is there's a lot of karate chops to the back that just knock people out. Like if you get somebody to turn around and just do a karate chop to the little bit to their back spine, they get knocked out. They pass out. Like Wilma did a karate chop and Buck did one on security
Oh,
guards. So, there wasn't even a fight scene. It was just get him to turn around, karate chop to the back.
yeah.
Look over there, karate chop to the back.
Save money on the
Fight scene. Yeah, you don't
choreography.
have to.
Right.
Just say, look over there, karate chop to the back.
Yeah. Maybe they got white jumpsuits somewhere on the ship.
Yeah.
And what was Wonder Woman's mentor's name? It's the same as a book.
Oh God. Man, I'm drawing a blank. It's Cho Lee. No, God dang it. Now
He
you're
wanted
gonna
to say Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi.
Wrong company.
Blind Wonder Woman mentor. There he is, I Ching.
I Ching, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew it was the
White
name of
jumpsuit
a.
era Wonder Woman. He like trained her.
Right. Because he's named after the class. That's classic Chinese text,
Yeah.
the I Ching. So,
So
yeah, it was an all right episode.
we have one question. This is from Brian Reigate, Comics and History. He said, "Here's a question for you to tackle on a future episode of Retro. Were there any children's programs that your parents did not let you watch? When I was a kid, my parents did not want me to watch Romper Room. They told me that watching that show would turn me stupid.
Yeah, I'm curious about that because I wonder what it is about Romper Room they thought was. I'm pretty sure I watched Romper Room.
I don't remember it. Brian looks like he might be your age, at least in the photos.
Yeah, I think we might be around the same age, or,
Yeah.
but yeah, I don't remember Romper Room super well. I looked it up on Wikipedia to jog my memory, and apparently I didn't realize that the show was not only syndicated but also franchised, so different television stations in different areas of the country could do their own version of the show and have different hosts, which I thought was kind of weird,
This
but
is a show I don't think I've ever watched. I watched a lot of shows, like I remember watching, well, Sesame Street, Electric Company, 3-2-1 Contact,
yeah.
Zoom, Via Alegre, all kinds of weird shows, but I don't remember this one at all. Mr. Rogers, Captain Kangaroo. This one doesn't ring a bell to me.
Via Allegra, that must
Did you
be
ever
something
watch
that
Romper
was.
Room, Barb? She never watched it either, and she was a TV. She was hooked on TV, so that's an interesting thing.
Yeah, maybe they didn't have it in New Mexico.
It was outlawed because it made people stupid.
Yeah. Maybe it was replaced with Via Allegra, because I've never heard of that. That sounds like it
Yeah,
didn't
that
probably
was
make
a
its way
it
up
was
this
a it
way.
was a span it was a Spanglish show. In other
Yeah.
words, half of it was in Spanish. The song was in Spanish, but everybody spoke English. Except for the lion. I remember the lion. The lion would speak in Spanish, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah, that must have been a Southwest show.
Yeah.
Then make its way up to the Northeast. So did you have any? I didn't. I couldn't really think of
If it
anything.
was, if it, there was no V-chip in my day, there, so if it was
Oh,
on
yeah.
TV any time of the day, we were allowed to watch it. I mean, if it was on TV, that meant that it was okay for kids.
I think maybe.
There were only like six stations. I mean, there was NBC,
Yeah.
ABC, Fox wasn't even around when I was a kid. It was NBC, ABC, CBS, and PBS. And that was it. And you had one like independent station on 57 or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, cable did come around when I was still a kid, but because I remember MTV coming out when I was still a kid and stuff like that, but I can't remember any specific shows that I wasn't allowed to watch, you know. And especially kids' shows. I mean, if there was anything I wasn't allowed to watch, it would have been just because it wasn't for kids or something. But I can't think of anything that was for kids that I wasn't allowed to watch.
Since this is Geek Brunch, I'm going to eat some brunch.
Oh, okay. But it's retrocast though, so you have to eat something that's expired.
I can't do that. So Barbara made me an egg sandwich with bacon and green chili and cheese.
Wow.
That's delicious.
I had a bagel this morning. I got up at like 7:30.
Let's talk about the. Were you in a strict environment? Did you have any kind of like restrictions on your watching?
No. They weren't, my parents weren't anything goes, but they weren't super strict either. You know, they paid attention to what we did, and but I don't think if something was for kids, I don't think they sat there and heavily monitor it, you know. I mean, I've heard of parents and talked to parents where they'll actually select from kids' television certain things they don't want them to watch. I mean, maybe this is what Brian's talking about, but they would feel a program was too, like, goofy or just too dumb, you know, that they would want to watch their kids to watch cartoons and stuff that were a little more like intelligent, or I don't know. But I don't think my parents and my own philosophy, not that I have kids, but I think that that's maybe managing things a little too much, you know. But
Well, TV's a lot different today too.
that's true. That's true.
Like, you might have had cable growing up, but I didn't, not until I was well into the teens, which meant at a teenage, I think once you start hitting teenage, even 12 maybe, you start to think more like an adult or rational thinking. At that point, you should know right from wrong. Like, you see something on TV is not real. But even cartoons, you know? Back in our day, you'd have Elmer Fudd with a gun, right? And he'd be shooting it, and Yosemite Sam would be shooting at bugs. You knew that you would not pick up a gun and shoot somebody. Do you know what I mean? Or you would not club somebody over the head with a mallet. Because you saw it on Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, I think my parents were active enough in
And that's as a kid. That's young. That's when you're
right.
like in your fours and fives and sixes that you're watching these cartoons.
Yeah, my parents must have helped me understand the difference between make believe, because when I was a kid, it was still where you had fake guns and stuff like that that we played with, and there were a lot of guns involved in the toys that we had and stuff, and weapons and stuff. And I remember understanding the difference, but I don't remember where that came from. And
And it looked different. The weird thing about guns back then is they looked more authentic. So like today's date, they try to like color them orange or do something with them so they don't, like a cop won't mistake a kid with a gun and shoot him. But back then, you would have like BB guns or pellet guns and you couldn't tell. Like if you just look at them from the glance, you couldn't tell if it was real.
Yeah, I mean, or even just not e even if it didn't actually fire any sort of projectile, you know, I had fake M16s, you know, that just went, you know, when you pull the trigger, it just made a noise or something. But they would be black and kind of a facsimile of the real thing. And I don't know that that was better or anything like that. I mean, in my childhood, there was never any problems or incidences in our neighborhood or anything. But that doesn't mean it was the right way to do things.
But now I think you have to be a little more aware as a parent, especially if you have like a satellite dish and you have all these movie channels and stuff, right? Because there is stuff with like adult content.
Right,
But
definitely.
I don't think as a teenager, I think you should be able to watch PG-13 and R, like I watched R movies when I was at least 13. Even her, Barb was watching Blood Beach when she was six. So she was watching horror movies at the drive-in when she was young.
Yeah, my parents didn't expose us to anything like that, but that's also may partially be their own taste. I mean, neither of my parents are into really violent horror movies or anything like that, so they didn't. I ended up seeing some of that stuff at friends' house and stuff. The first time I saw a Friday the 13th movie was at a friend's house. But yeah, I didn't really seek a lot of that stuff out on myself, you know. And cable has changed as well, like what's available and what from the early days where cable was around, and some of it was self-policed. I remember.
I remember the cable used to have the switch box. Like there was like no remote control to change the channel. You put it on three and then you'd have these clickers.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you'd have to do that, or
Yeah.
use a VCR. Run the cable through the VCR or something. And I think I was kind of a scared kid of certain things. I didn't really want to seek out a lot of that stuff. When I did see that Friday the 13th movie, I think I hid my face a lot at my friend's house. I didn't really want to see a lot of it, and for whatever reason, I don't know why I was like that, but I even was really afraid when the f we got MTV and the video for Thriller came out, which I'm sure so you were like 10 years older than me at the time, so it probably sounds ridiculous, but I don't know. I was still in elementary school, and
Vincent
we're
Price does have a creepy voice, though.
yeah. What was that probably set the mood, but what really freaked me out, because I actually remember we had a babysitter at the time, and when
Was she hot?
Michael Jackson, I know her now. I don't remember what she looked like at the time, but she's not now. So yeah, it's kind of hard to. I probably thought she was at the time, just having this teenage girl around.
Yeah, that's
But anyway.
we had a babysitter. Very little though, like 'cause my grandparents would babysit us, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, ours would too sometimes.
So there was a neighborhood girl that would come over maybe once every 6 months and babysit her, but I don't remember her being hot.
Yeah, so what it was Michael Jackson's on a date with this girl on the beginning of the video, and then at a certain point he turns away and he looks back at her, and his eyes have changed. And when I saw that, when I saw his weird eyes, I just lost it.
Like a possession or something, yeah,
Yeah, it freaked
demon.
me out. I wouldn't even watch MTV for a while. I was so freaked out. I
Oh, and
was afraid of Michael Jackson for a
when I was
while.
young, horror was not like serial killers didn't even exist. That kind of horror didn't exist until
Yeah, it didn't.
I was a teenager.
Yeah, it didn't really
So when.
start till the 80s, the early 80s.
For me, it was like classic monsters. I would like as a kid, I would turn on the TV on Sunday, and there would be like horror theater, and you'd see like classic Frankenstein or classic Dracula, Bela Lugosi. I never saw like Christopher Lee vampire movies, but if it was like the Creature from the Black Lagoon or something, you know, it was all the Universal monsters. Yeah.
Yeah, and those were even older.
Yeah, Dracula did scare me though. As a kid, I had a hard time watching all the other movies. I kind of thought they were heroes, like Wolfman, and like they had like a heroic aspect to them, even if they turned into a monster. And Frankenstein was like this innocent being, you know,
Yeah,
never
yeah.
thought of. He had an innocence to him. Yeah, he was a monster, but there was something about him that made it okay. But
Right.
Dracula would scare the hell out of me.
I can see that because I watched a lot of the classic Universal horror movies a few years ago, and because I was interested in seeing them, and obviously, why the hell else would I watch it? Unless I
Yeah.
was forced to, but I could see that being afraid of Dracula, because Bela Lugosi, I think a lot of it is his stare, his
His
eyes, his
eyes look
face.
into my eyes.
Yeah, he's still
He would
kind
turn
of
into the
freaky.
bat, and it's like, yeah, he was not a. Sometimes they make vampires look beautiful, but he was, to me, he was a very creepy looking man. Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely before the days of vampires being more of like a sex symbol or something. Twilight and Anne Rice and all that romance stuff. Vampires are a little scarier.
But yeah, I don't remember any limitations.
No, not on children's content. I don't think my parents really, and there was a lot, you know. Saturday morning cartoons were really big, and that was a lot of what we watched. We just sit down on Saturdays, and it's not like today where there's a lot of, it was only on at certain times of day, you know. Like nowadays, there's kids programming on at any time,
24/7, yeah.
and on
You
top of
had to
that,
work for it when you were a kid.
yeah.
Especially if you didn't have a VCR. I didn't have a VCR. I woke up and watched the lines on the screen, the color bars until programming started and cartoons started on Saturday morning, 'cause I didn't have an alarm and I was afraid I was gonna miss it. But
Yeah, I mean we ended up getting a VCR while I was still growing up, but that was different even as well, you know. I mean, one of the first tape we got ET, but you couldn't buy a lot of tapes, especially early on. They were expensive. And you know, we ended up getting a Blockbuster, so we would rent stuff, but
Yeah, the tapes you would get, you'd set it for the lowest setting so you could record like 6 hours of
yeah, on one
videos,
tape.
and then you'd use it again.
Right.
You just tape over it, you know? Once you
Yep.
saw what you wanted, you tape
Yep.
over it.
I don't, did I ever say this when I saw the first Police Academy movie?
No, but you know what? I've been dying to watch that again. I
Oh,
just
yeah.
can't. I can't find it
Well.
like on cable anymore. Like I'll search for it every now and that on the dish. You know how it's got the search capability. I never see it, and then I don't see it on Netflix or anything.
Well, 'cause I had seen a bunch of the other Police Academy movies, the later
Yeah.
ones, and I think those were all, I think, PG-13 or something, and the first one was rated R, and my mom didn't pay attention to that, or I don't think I even noticed when we rented it. And they just rented it for me. I was watching it in the living room one afternoon. All of a sudden, there's this scene where they're all hanging out on the beach and stuff. And there's all these women. They're hanging out with all these women, and the women get up and all of them take off their tops and start like dancing around the fire. And I was like, "Holy crap!" And I'm like looking back, making sure that my mom's like not coming out of the kitchen while the
Yeah.
scene's going on.
My
But it.
mom would get embarrassed at that, but I don't think my dad cared. Like my dad would buy all these get all these on VHS, like these sword and sorcery movies, and they had like a lot of nudity in those things, man. Like topless women and rape and all kinds of crap, and never. The only thing is, my mom would walk in and say, "What are you watching?" Like, what do you
Yeah.
have the kid? My dad would take the brunt of it for that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny.
I used to like those movies, man. I just wait for the scene, wait for the scene. And then when dad's not around, you put the VCR back in, and then you would go to that scene and you'd hit pause. Just say, wow.
And be it's not well not like Blu-rays today, it would be kind of blurry, and when you pause it would be not a picture perfect quality pause.
Slow motion.
So well, there was one other question, but I don't know if it was for this or for the regular Geek Brunch where Norbert was wondering.
That was for the regular.
Was it okay?
Yeah, that was me and Bomer plot a lot of comic books that we never finish.
Right, yeah.
A couple years ago, he came up with a plot about a space asylum, and I created a character that was insane on that satellite, and or not a satellite, but it's like space station.
Space station.
Yeah, and he was a character that thought he was Laurel and Hardy. He's
Yeah, I remember
criminally insane.
when I read it, I remember it sounded familiar. I can't remember if it was just because I had listened to you talk about it on there, if you had talked about it on
Yeah,
here.
we actually come up with some cool ideas that would be it, that I would read. I mean, I don't think a lot of majority would read our craziness, but that I would read, and I know Bomer would read. That it would be fun to do, just to do it, you know, like not to make money, because we'd never make money selling it, but I think it'd be fun.
Yeah.
I'm gonna finish one. I got to. I have too many freaking stupid ideas in my head to not see through one of them.
I think it'll be satisfying to do that. Just
Yeah.
to finish it, you know.
Yep.
Just to have done it.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know, you could put together some kind of small press thing. Kind of
Yeah, that's
small.
that would be the goal, is you put something together and then you get it
Small
in
run.
print. Sell If you sell 500 copies or 200 copies, then you're like, wow, people bought that.
Yeah.
So you want to jump to comics?
Sure.
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to?
You can go ahead.
You had a badass post, though. I hope that you cover that Batman issue or whatever was going on there,
Oh, you know,
or at least talk about it. That looked
yeah, I
cool.
could talk about it a little bit because that was actually an issue of Brave and the Bold that has the Teen Titans in it. So I was reading it for from Kid to Flash,
Yeah.
but I can mention, well, I can just talk about it right now
Yeah.
because the story was a Bob Haney, Jim Aparo story from Brave and the Bold issue 102, and the. It was really interesting because it's from the early 70s, and you know, eventually, a decade later, they'd really get that idea. Maybe not even because it was not that long before Denny O'Neil was writing Batman. I think that was not that long before later. But anyways, it's definitely not the creature of the night or the Batman that's just a rumor, you know, that people aren't
Yeah.
really sure if he really exists and stuff. Because the opening panel is just him walking down the street in this sort of nice area neighborhood of Gotham, and even Gotham having a nice area. Like, it's not something that you see all that often nowadays. Well, it was kind of around the same time because Denny O'Neil, his first issue of was Detective Comics 395, which came out in 1969. But yeah, it was a funny opening panel because Batman's just enjoying the weather, and
In the middle of daylight, just walking down the
yep,
street.
just
Nobody's given him like a
nope.
second glance or.
None of the other characters in the panels or in the panel are even looking at him. He's just walking down the street, full costume, you know, the blue and gray. And he's thinking to himself, sheer magic. Winter's over and pretty girls are blossoming like flowers. Delicious.
The delicious is what really
Yeah.
puts a cap on that. Why is
Yeah,
that
definitely.
delicious? You want to
He
eat
the
that, or what? Is it tasty?
Yeah,
That's
he's
funny.
just the ladies are delicious. They're looking good to the Batman.
We
Yeah,
know
and
what
then, you know, he goes,
Bob Haney was thinking at that time.
yeah. He's channeling some of his own emotions.
Yeah, he was walking down the street and said, God, I'd like to eat one of those.
Like, I bet Batman feels the same way when he's walking around Gotham City.
Yeah.
He's taking a stroll in the daytime. But yeah, so then from there he goes on to stop a mugging, and he ends up in this. What was also interesting is then he goes on, he follows this mugger into the worst part of Gotham, and he thinks to himself, man, I haven't been here in years. And I'm thinking to myself, you're Batman. Like, aren't you supposed to go to the worst parts of the city? Aren't that where the criminals are? But he hasn't been there in years. I'm like, what is this guy? Is he, you know, what is this guy doing? It's really funny, but so then he goes on to interact with this group of young people that are policing the area themselves, and he ends up kind of helping them, and he gets to a point where he realizes he's a little out of touch, so that's how he ends up calling the Teen Titans in.
Yeah. Do you actually have this issue or is it digital?
This one I did buy.
102, is it in good shape? It's pretty expensive. That's why I'm asking. It's like a $50 book.
No, I got it from, let me just double check to make sure I'm not saying the number right, but yeah, it's I'm saying it right. I think I got it at my comic shop. It's not, it wasn't a high grade, I know that.
Oh, okay. It's probably like a VG then.
Yeah, I think it was about a VG. I think it might have been,
It's still a
might have been eight
$10
or,
book at a
yeah, I think it
VG.
might have been an $8 or $10 book though.
Yeah.
But it's in pretty good shape. It has a little bit of a very minor fold along the middle. These
Yeah.
were the this was the area where they were doing 52-page books
Yeah,
for
they have
25 cents.
the back of it has got the Doom Patrol Robot Man.
Yeah, it's a reprint of Doom Patrol 100 something.
100 or 105. It's condensed.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool issue though. It has a really funny cover where Batman's riding on a bulldozer with a guy, and he's saying, "Right on, driver, crush those defiant kids." And
Right, because they're like protesting. We're like, you know how people will like lay
yeah,
down so you can't move them,
right.
and they all have their hands joined, so like they're not gonna move. If you, it'll be really difficult to move them. And Batman's
Yeah.
like, plow them
Wow.
over. He just take them. These defiant kids.
Yeah, it's Kid Flash, Robin, and Wonder Girl that are
Yeah.
laying on the ground holding
It's really a great
hands.
cover, and I don't own this. God dang it. But Brave and the Bold is something that I have so many holes in that I need to fill, especially in my 1973, go back to 1973 books. It's probably the biggest, the most popular title that I'm missing a lot of, you know? Because all the other ones, like, I'm narrowing down Justice League. Like, I'm like 10 issues away from Justice League. I'm like 4 issues away from Flash. And the most Green Lantern, I'm already there. You know, like for most of the major titles, I'm already there. But Brave and the Bold is one with superheroes. I mean, I'm still missing a lot of like House of Secrets and Ghosts and House of Mystery, but that I am missing a lot. And I don't have this particular issue. It looks awesome.
Yeah, I thought I got it from, I'm looking at my orders on my comic shop. I thought I got it from there.
Yeah, I need to complete this at some point. I even took this with me to Heroes Con. I was gonna get some Brave and the Bold, but I got distracted with my Golden Age fix, you know? And I still wanna do that. I still wanna get my Ray and Black Condor, and then once I've got those 2 issues, I think I'm gonna go back to focusing on getting my DC stuff. But this looks like a really cool issue. I'll be curious to read it.
Yeah, I don't really collect the series, but yeah, I just picked it up for the show.
For Teen Titans, yeah.
Yeah, for 'cause I'm not technically
I mean, for Kid Flash, it's
right, but I've been pretty much covering
in
every
sequential order, though, right?
right, and so I've in most of his appearances, besides in Flash, are in Teen Titans.
Or some team-up book.
Yeah, or if the Teen Titans appear somewhere else,
Yeah.
he's with them. But
That's very cool.
so
All right, so my issue is Bloodstone number one from Marvel Comics. I think the date is 2001. December 2001. This is about Elsa Bloodstone, and you might ask, well, who's that? Well, her father appeared in a lot of Marvel premier comics back in the day as Bloodstone, and he's a monster hunter. Well, Elsa Bloodstone is his daughter, and that's kind of like where this takes place after his death. And she is currently appearing in Secret Wars Marvel Zombies. So she's like the major character that's there. There's a couple of Marvel Zombies comic books, right, that are out right now. And she's the one that's just in Marvel Zombies. There's like Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies. And there's Marvel Zombies. And she's in Marvel Zombies. And she's appeared in First Wave and other books. And every time she appears, I've really enjoyed her. And I noticed her book was getting hot. Like, if you go on eBay, it's selling for like $16 to $20 or more. And I was like, what the hell is she getting hot for? So I bought the series for cheap. But I'm glad I bought it because, well, the artwork is by Michael Lopez with inks by Scott Hanna, but it's an Abnett and Lanning story. And it's really good. It starts off with her flying with her mother, and her mother's pregnant with another baby. And they've been in Europe, and I guess they do a lot of traveling, but they've been she's been long divorced or separated from her ex-husband, which was Bloodstone, and they essentially inherit the mansion that he owned. And he was a monster hunter, so he had various weird antiques and all kinds of weird stuff going on there. And they arrive, and they're greeted by the guy that has the is basically giving them the house. His name is Barnabas, and he's really creepy. And he might have some motives. He's talking to somebody in the background, and it's very weird. It's like this guy Barnabas is saying, "Stay out of sight. Don't let your daughter or ex what you know." It might be the guy alive, but I don't think it is. He's just basically telling somebody to stay away and don't tell the daughter who she is, because they don't want her to know that her father was a monster hunter. But she's a wisecracking, you know, teenage girl, and they get there and they're either going to inherit the house or they can sell it. And Barnabas has wishes to sell it or to give, you know, the antiques to other people. And it looks like they're going to go that route. But then Elsa actually finds a secret room. And in that secret room, she finds like a Frankenstein monster, and he's alive. And she notices he's all stitched up and stuff. He actually saves her from these weird, like, beetles. The beetles are encompassing her as she gets into this room. She tries on, like, an Indiana Jones hat, and all these beetles just start crawling up her leg, and she passes out. And she runs into this guy, and he says his name is Adam, but he's, like, Frankenstein's monster. And he basically gives her the Bloodstone. And she puts it on, and the Bloodstone bounds to her body, and she says, "Wow, I feel so alive." And she actually gets, like, powers and such. And she gets, like, superpowers, and she gets, like, her abilities. Like, before he can tell her what her abilities are, she sees, like, this lamp. And it's like an Aladdin's lamp, and she picks it up, and she says, "Oh, I wish I would understand where this stone came from." And it zaps her into this cemetery. And in the cemetery, you actually see Dracula, and he's, like, killing a lot of people. And that it's to be continued, but she runs into Dracula, and it looks like the Marvel Dracula. Like, it doesn't look like it's somebody else. It looks like it's the legit Dracula. He even says, "My name is Dracula." So it was an interesting story about, like, an angst teenager that just goes to look like to start her life in the United States. And she meets a couple of friends and gets caught up in this house and actually finds the Bloodstone and gets powers. The art, even though this is 2001, looks very, very, like, imagey, like, drawing her very sexual, I guess, even though she's like a teenage girl. But It's a good series. It's four issues, and I read issue one.
Yeah, I saw that you posted pictures of it when you were reading it, and I didn't even realize it was a Marvel because of the way it looked.
Yeah.
But they were definitely a different company around that time, as far as what they published and stuff.
Yeah.
And different art styles and stuff, and the market that they were going for.
Yeah, it's cool. I like her as a character. She's like they introduce the character, they introduce the mother, they introduce the situation and the weird mansion, and everything is really interesting. One of the other teenage boys she meets, they live with their grandfather, and the grandfather is like he just starts like sensing that these people are have like some mystic ability about them and starts shouting like these people are evil, they're horrors, you know. So and the teenage boy is like, don't pay attention to him, he's old, he doesn't know what he's talking about, but he probably does.
And that was her introduction.
Yeah, I think this is her first appearance, and then she makes an appearance back in Warren Ellis's Next Wave. And then she's been in, like, there was a d the Fearless Defenders. I don't know if you read that. That was
Oh
a
yeah.
all female type defenders group. She showed up in
Oh,
that,
okay.
and
Yeah.
I've always liked her. And when I heard that she was becoming popular, I still don't know why she's becoming popular right now. Like, I'm just gonna go to eBay and see what it says right now. But it was ridiculous for some. This is like something that you think would be in the dollar bin, right? You know.
Yeah.
But
That's weird.
yeah, it's bizarre. So let's see, Blood.
I did
It's
read.
number one.
I can't remember if I finished Fearless Defenders. I think I must have.
I enjoyed it. It was very like I'm a completist of Defenders just because I like the first incarnation so much. So anytime a Defenders book comes out, regardless of what it is, I'll buy it. But this Defenders was like a lighthearted, all-female type adventure story. It's almost like it spawned off of like the Heroes for Hire when she was hiring like all-female cast. But
Yeah.
it was entertaining. Like, yeah,
Yeah,
it's
I
like
liked it.
I see a lot of buy it nows like for $19.99 or $24.99, and it's the first Elsa Bloodstone. So the part that I can't absolutely figure out is why she's popular now, other than she's in Marvel Zombies. There's no, usually these coincide with some kind of like movie announcement or something. Like
Yeah.
if there was going to be a Blade movie and they said, oh, Bloodstone would be in it as a monster hunter, then I could see that rising in price, but not from
Right.
another mini series that's coming out. I've never seen that happen. Do you know what I mean? It's bizarre. I don't know. I think it could be speculators just speculating. I don't know what drives that. It's a weird market.
Is it selling at that price?
Yeah.
Huh. Because I know sometimes what people ask for on eBay is good for a laugh.
Oh no, it's like hot, and you can go to like Sold, and it's going for about $20.
Right. Yeah, it's always interesting to see sometimes. Sometimes it's actually selling at that price, and then sometimes you'll see people that obviously have no idea of the market what they're putting out this full run of a comic that you can get the individual issues for 50 cents a piece or something, and they're asking some ridiculous price for it.
Well, I see the naive seller. This is de if you go to eBay right now, you'll know these aren't naive sellers. You could tell.
Right.
So yeah, the only thing out the part of the puzzle that I'm having a hard time finding out is why it's so hot right now.
I know the Marvel Zombies tends to do pretty well. I've heard, but
It is really good. I really enjoyed that. the series. And she's popular enough to have her own Twitter account, because I remember tweeting something like, I really enjoyed seeing Elsa Bloodstone again in Marvel Zombies number one. And Elsa Bloodstone replied to me, well, thank you.
A brush with fame.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I read another issue of Air Boy.
Okay. I read the new one. That's trippy.
Yeah. I'm still curious about that. It's very.
Well, let me tell you something about it. Just, I know this is a sidetrack, but
that's okay.
It's like an autobiographical. I don't think all of it's true. It can't be, unless James Robinson's a really sexual and drug addicted person. but it's basically him getting hired by Image to write Airboy, and he's really reluctant to do it because he has no ideas. So he says, well, I'll go meet the artist and see what we can come up with. And they basically do cocaine and acid and just weird things go on. And then they have a gangbang with some woman. Meanwhile, while trying to talk about creating Airboy, and he like shows up, but it's so weird.
Huh. That reminds me of that movie. I can't remember what it's called, where the movie's more about trying to make the movie.
Yeah, this is exactly that. Exactly that.
Something.
I know what you're talking about, because I've seen a movie like that. I don't know if we're in the same movie, but.
Yeah, I'll have to try to figure out what it was called. I want to say the Orchid, or had Orchid in the title or something.
Do you remember who was in it? Black Orchid?
No. I know people hate when people do this on podcasts, because
yeah.
Then the listeners are jumping.
They're like shouting at their iPod or whatever, going, you idiot! Don't you know it's this?
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong about Orchid being in the title.
Well, Get Shorty is kind of like that indirectly.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't remember that movie. I think I saw it.
It's about a movie, making a movie about a movie.
Yeah. But this movie I'm thinking of, it's similar where they're struggling to even to have ideas about the film and how to approach it and all that. So, well, I might think of it. But in the meantime, Airboy number two. And I didn't realize when I talked about the first issue that for a while that this was actually a biweekly comic.
And it was cheap.
It's
thin.
Yeah, it was 16 pages or something like that. But same creative team, Chuck Dixon, Tim Sherman. And on the cover this time, there's another pilot featured that has a black jacket, black mask. It says the air fighters return and the wolf and the phoenix. The wolf and the phoenix is the name of the issue. But the guy.
I hate to interrupt you again, but I just thought of something. I want to make you aware of it just in case you're interested.
That's okay.
But as I was thumbing through this month's previews, which just came out about a week ago, there's an Airboy Golden Age collection that collects all of them, of Air Fighters and Airboy, and it's pretty cheap. So I ordered it.
That's interesting, yeah.
It'd be kind of interesting to know about how it relates to what you're reading now. Yeah.
Right, because there's definitely some
the father and son aspect, at least.
Yeah, and I think that they're intentionally pulling on a lot of aspects from the Golden Age. Okay, so I also had a sudden illumination where I figured out what I was thinking of, and the movie is Adaptation.
Oh, okay.
And it had Nick Cage in it. It's a Charlie Kaufman movie, and Nick Cage plays Charlie Kaufman. And I was partially right because it's about Charlie Kaufman struggling to write a screenplay about, from the book The Orchid Thief. So it's about him struggling to write an
That's where the
adaptation of a
yeah, that's
book.
where the orchid came from.
Yeah, that's where I got was getting the orchid. So I was kind of right a little bit there. I started to watch that movie and I didn't finish it. It was just kind of, normally I'm pretty open to artsy stuff, but it was irritating me for some reason. I don't think I was in the right mood at the time to watch it.
Yeah.
Anyways.
You have to be in the mood for those kind of things. Just like if it's a comic that's really dense, you have to be in the mood for it. Like it can't be like right before bed or you won't get everything.
Yeah, and you're reading one page and you're
Yeah.
realizing you probably could have read a modern comic in the time that you finished the page.
Yeah.
But
Sorry to distract you.
no, no
Go
problem.
forward.
So the guy that's on the cover prominently, his name is Sky Wolf, and
Oh shit, I just read Skywolf. I'm sorry.
was he in something else or?
No, he was in an air. The, there was an Airboy comic that recently came out, I think, for Moonstone, and it had Skywolf in it.
Oh, okay.
Real prominently, like, he was a major character.
Oh, okay.
I actually liked his character. He was such a cool character. I
Yeah,
liked him more than I did Airboy.
I was kind of wondering if Airboy is in the public domain because of the way that he's, or if he's a property that is owned by somebody.
Oh, I know what I read. God, this is terrible. I'm not going to let you finish. It
I didn't
was
even really start yet.
for this episode. I mean, for this podcast. A couple of weeks episodes ago, I covered Air Fighters Meet Sergeant Strike Special, and it had Skywolf,
Oh, right.
Valkyrie, and Airboy. Yeah, I knew I had read this stuff from 1988, but it was Chuck
Okay.
Dixon.
Yeah, I didn't even put that together. I
All
don't
right,
pay attention to
I'm
what you
gonna
say.
let I'm gonna let you talk now.
All right, I'm gonna hold you to that this time. So Skywolf, he starts out in the beginning, he's interrupting this criminal activity on the waters. There's one of those planes that can land on the water, and it meets up with this with a couple guys on a boat, and they're gonna do a deal. And the guy that comes out of the plane says, "You got the bread?" And the guy, one of the guys on the boat, he opens a bag, but it looks like he's gonna pull something out other than money. He says, "By the way, remember that dealer in Lauderdale who burned you? He gives you his best," and he pulls out a severed head. And the guy's pleased to see this. He says, "Take 10 large out of the bag and split it. Give me a hand with the coke so I can get out of." And all of a sudden, "Hold it right there, dirtbag. You losers pack up and get away from my island." And it's Skywolf. He's in this pretty crazy, I think it had a G.I. Joe plane that looked like this. I'm not going to do a good job in describing it, but it's got helicopter blades, but it's a longer plane. And one of the guys on the boat says, "Screw you, Pappy." And Skywolf says, "I hope you'd say that." And ram, he just opens fire on the plane and the boat. And he lets a couple go to, he lets, well, I think he blows up the plane and then he lets the boat go to, so they can take the message back that they should stay away from his island. But when he heads back to his island, he sees a couple figures standing on the ground next to a plane. And at first, he warns them, "This is a private field. Get your butts back on that sissy plane." And he's like, "Huh? Wait." And he recognizes the uniform that the new airboy is wearing, as that recognizes it as from Airboy's father. So he sees who it is, and so then it jumps forward that they're in, the three of them are in some kind of little shack or wherever Skywolf works. And obviously they've been catching up, and they've informed them that his father's died, and Skywolf's telling him about how they used to fly together, him and the new Airboy's father. And it turns out that the reason that the two of them are there is to track down his father's ship, which is called Birdie, and he's got it there. It's not in the greatest shape. Skywolf says that he meant to work on her and keep her in good shape, but he just didn't have the time. And so there's a sequence of several panels where it's kind of like a montage in a movie where Skywolf's here helping Airboy work on the plane and get it back in working condition and stuff. And he, at one point, Airboy says to Skywolf, "My dad said something before he died. I asked Hirota about it, but what was it?" He said, "Son, Valkyrie." And then there's just a panel of Skywolf's eye looking over to the side to imply thinking to himself. And he puts a hand on Davy's shoulder and says, "We gotta talk." And so then he tells him, starts to tell him a little bit about Valkyries. That's the name of a woman that your dad used to know. Well, it was a long time before he met your mother. And but then he tells Davy that they hadn't really, him and his father hadn't really spoken in 20 years, and they drifted apart after Valkyrie disappeared. But he doesn't, Skywolf doesn't know whether Valkyrie is dead or not. That she'd be a hard one to kill, but Airboy's father had hidden himself away in a monastery and disappeared. And not only did they not talk for a long time, his father really never didn't talk to anybody for a long time. And Davy said it's kind of similar to when his mom died, that he threw himself into his work and he was more raised by Hirota than his father. So then the second part of the story takes place a couple weeks later in South America, and Davy is getting some practice. He's flying his plane. He's flying Birdie. They've got it in shape. And Skywolf is in his plane following him, and they're making some attacks on a field that has some kind of like criminal. There's like the helicopter that they recognize that escaped them at the monastery. So Skywolf, or rather Airboy, fires on this helicopter and explains. And then they decide to land and get some names. Who's the leader? And Airwolf says, "I'm here to avenge my father, David Nelson. I'm here to find who killed him and exterminate them." And this guy that he's talking to, this guy that claims that he's the boss or the El Jefe of the men. They're wondering who they are. But when Davy calls him terrorist, the El Jefe just kind of looks at him and says, "You're calling us terrorists, basically, but is it terrorist to kill the man who sells bullets that slay innocent women and children? And is it terrorism to kill the one who helps the monsters in Gamata Cruz stay in power?" And Davy's starting to have a little doubt, even though he claims that his father would never do something like that. He says, "Whoa, oh, he wouldn't, huh? Well, I'd have Marisa tell you differently if her tongue had not been cut out by the men your father sold arms to. Apparently, there's much about your father that you don't know." And while this is going on, Hirota and Skywolf are listening at a distance, and Skywolf asks Hirota if it's true, and Hirota just says he kept his business dealings a secret. And so Airboy's asking for proof, and El Jefe is showing him documentation and vouchers, bills of sale, all with his father's signature on it. He says, "Well, if he's like, you're lying, you're not telling the truth," and he says, "then go ahead and shoot me if I'm not telling the truth." And Airwolf can't do it. So then the final couple pages of the story take place in this city called Bogantila. That's the capital of Gamata Cruz, and which used to be called the Street of Flowers, but it's fallen on bad times. They show some gallows with some bodies hanging. There's no tourists, no tourists come to there anymore, and shots of gunfire keep up the people who do live there at night. So this man reports to a general who's expecting guns to arrive in a shipment. And it's really sort of surprising and different in tone from the rest of the issue. The general goes to someone called Miserio, which is, I'm assuming, is Spanish for misery, and he goes into this room, and it's this cloaked skeletal figure. So far, this issue has really not been anything like that couldn't be realistic. And the general complains, "We haven't had any guns in over a month, and still this Nelson sends no guns. You told me you had him by the cojones." And Miserio says, "Yes, there may be a delay, but Nelson will cooperate. He has no choice as long as I hold Valkyrie. As long as I hold his beloved in thrall, only death would stop Nelson from doing my bidding." And he's got this, there's all these like strange machines, and Valkyrie looking actually pretty young compared to Skywolf, who should be around the same age, is in this, lying on this bed. Looks like she's in kind of comatose. Just he has her in some kind of contraption, seems to be preserving her and keeping her captive. So finally have a sense of where the Valkyrie is, and maybe a situation where Airwolf's father was the one that was supplying these guns, but maybe he was being blackmailed or controlled somehow by Miserio to do so because of his hold on Valkyrie. So, yeah, I'm enjoying the second issue, even though I don't have a background with the Golden Age stuff. I like that there's a little bit of a legacy thing going on there, and Chuck Dixon sets up a nice little mystery to start out, where Davey has to pick up the pieces of what's going on with his father, and there's a lot of mystery as to what was happening, and he's having, I like how he's retracing his father's steps and how he meets Skywolf in this issue, and meets somebody that used to fly with his father and is having to find out all this stuff about his father's life. Makes for an interesting read.
Yeah, it'd be a weird situation too if Valkyrie being a lover of the father and then a lover of the son.
Yeah, 'cause she has her age preserved, so.
Yeah, that'd be weird. Yeah, it sounds like you're having a good time with that Airboy. It sounds pretty dense for 16 pages.
Yeah, I think it was
Like
actually
a
even
lot
more.
of story page,
Yeah.
story.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Are these the
Definitely.
ones that you have on the scribbled or whatever that is called?
Scribd, yeah,
Scribd?
Yeah, because it was originally Eclipse, but the reason it's on there is because IDW reprinted the Airboy series, and so IDW has stuff on their service.
Yeah, did you see Devil's Due is teaming up with First,
Yeah.
bring back a lot of stuff. I mean, the only thing I've seen so far is an E-Man reprint, but they're supposed to be original content. So I saw that they were going to launch a Badger series. If you read that was a character that was a very unique character, because I can't. I mean, I guess the closest character I could think of that relates to him is like the Creeper, because he's like batshit crazy, like really belongs in an insane asylum. So,
Yeah, even just to have that stuff in print again.
yeah.
I mean, a lot of the first stuff, if not all of it, can be got pretty cheaply from back issue sellers and stuff, but there's a lot of people who just won't bother to do that,
Yeah.
or that buy stuff digitally and stuff, and a lot of that first, a lot of the stuff that first published was really, really good, and it was creator owned stuff at a time before Image and publishers like that existed, and it's they a lot of good creators did books for First, and just to have that stuff in print so people check it out is really good.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah,
A
that's
lot of that stuff from the 80s, it's not in print. It's like we've had some announcements too just this week that Atari Force is going to be
on Dynamite,
reprinted,
yeah.
and that
That's DC.
yeah, and then on the Marvel side of things, ROM and Micronauts
Yeah.
coming from, is it IDW
Oh, I
or is
just know
it
that IDW is going to do a great job with ROM, because Chris Ryle, who's like with the company, seems like it is, that's his character. Do you know what I mean? Like every commission this guy gets is ROM, so like he can't. He's probably the most excited. He's like a kid right now. I got ROM. What can I do with it? You know.
Yeah, I think that's why it got done, because he must have just been persistent at working at it.
Persistent, yeah.
Yeah, because he wanted it for himself on, you know, on top of it. And
And
yeah, the one.
we talked about it a little bit last night, and I think they're gonna keep like the Marvel characters in it on the reprints.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so like more so like than Transformers, ROM tied heavily into the Marvel universe, you know,
Yeah.
with the dire wraiths, and it had a lot of X-Men and Avengers and stuff show up in it. And I from what people were telling me, like we had Ryan Drost of Star Joes on, and he said that he thinks that, you know, they're gonna have the Marvel characters, because when they first did Transformers and Spider-Man showed up in 8, they didn't do issue 8. But then I guess the later volume came out from IDW and like a hardcover, and they did do Spider-Man did show up in there. So I hope it just has the original content, you know. And the Micronauts is the same, because if you reprint the Micronauts, Bug is owned by Marvel. Like, that
Right.
character is owned by Marvel. He was created for the Micronauts, but is owned by Marvel. And he's appeared like in you know, like the Abnett and Lanning stuff, the space stuff, the Marvel Cosmic.
Yeah, I would guess that will be the case too, just based on the level of cooperation that IDW and Marvel already seem to have,
Yeah.
where they publish some stuff for Marvel. I mean, they have those figures that they do sometimes of Marvel characters. So yeah, it seems like IDW and Marvel work together. Because
Yes.
are they the ones that are doing the Disney comics too?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. It probably is like a similar example to them doing the Disney comics where.
Yeah, I think they got a good relationship in the fact that I think Marvel knows they can make money off of nothing, which is smart to do, right? I mean, like in the Disney case, they're probably saying, "I don't think we're going to make a lot of money selling Disney comics in America, but if we license it off and let somebody else try, let them do it."
Right, and they might actually make more money that
Yeah.
way because they don't have to. It's like you said, there's no expense
They
on their part.
yeah, they do nothing. All they do is sit back and collect paycheck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope that's the case, but yeah, there's I think this San Diego Comic-Con had me the most excited that I've ever been with the announcements and stuff. I think they've been really fantastic. Like
Yeah,
even
there's a lot of good stuff this year.
the DC stuff is like really got me excited because it's a lot of the writers that created the characters, like Firestorm's coming back at Jerry Conway. You
Yeah.
know? Mike W. Barr is gonna be doing Katana. So it's like there's gonna be the Outsiders coming back, Metamorpho. He's done by Lepristi. So I'm excited for these announcements. Like there's just so much.
Yeah, it
So
was
much good
interesting to see
stuff.
the I was very interested to see the Titans Hunt series announced because I've been covering all the original volume of Teen Titans and from Kid to Flash and
I didn't hear about this Titans one. What is this?
oh really? It was announced along with that series that with the older Lois and Clark and there's like four series that they announced. I
And are
think are
they on
coming out in
continuity
October.
or are they?
They're not in the, well, I don't know. I know that the older Lois and Clark series is the older Lois and Clark from Convergence.
Yeah.
And then there's that one that Neil Adams is doing. Did you hear about that with all the Kirby characters?
No. But that worries me. Because Neil Adams is like batshit crazy now.
Yeah, he's writing it also.
Oh, Lord.
I think.
I hope not.
I gotta find the announcement now. Because there was four series altogether
One of
that
the only
were.
DC titles I've ever dropped is when Neil Adams came back to Batman.
Right.
I was like, what the
Was that
fuck is this?
Batman Odyssey or something like that,
Yeah,
wasn't
yeah, yeah.
it? But I know that the Titans Hunt one is the solicitation or the news item was that a character named Lilith
I know that
has.
character. That is a Titans character.
Right.
Yeah.
But the way they presented it, they're not like saying this is the character from Teen Titans Volume 1 and but
Yeah.
that's what it is. And she's going after wants to talk to Dick Grayson and Donna Troy and Roy Harper, and she wants to tell them about a Titans team that they don't remember, and characters that they don't like, people that they don't remember, including Mal and Narc. The other Titans characters in
Yeah.
Titans Volume 1. And I'm almost wondering if it, that one seems like it does maybe happen in the main DC continuity. Because I'm wondering if, how like in the earlier issues of, what was it called? Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Yeah.
There was some kind of mentions of an earlier Titans team, and there were just different continuity things that didn't quite fit in. So I'm wondering if they're using this as a way to fit in, and sort of fix that to say, yes, there was actually like a previous Teen Titans team that Dick Grayson. Yeah, here we go. So Titans Hunt launches in October by Dan Abnett and Paulo Siqueira,
Yeah.
described as a secret history of the Teen Titans. The series stars a young woman named Lilith with visions of the future that involves the Teen Titans team never before seen. Convergence is over, but the ripples are still being felt, especially by a young precog named Lilith, etc., etc. Why does she feel compelled to seek out Dick Grace and Roy Harper, Donna Troy, and an Atlantean named Garth, and warn them that something dark and sinister is coming after them. Who are Mel, Nark, Hank Hall, and Don Granger, and what is their connection to the others?
Hawk and Dove.
Yeah, so I mean, Hawk and Dove were part of the Teen Titans,
yeah.
Though it was Hank and Don Hall, so it looks like they're going to use the later version of Hawk and Dove and sort of change that.
Oh, is it the female Dove?
Don Granger, yeah.
Oh no, but I
D-A,
the other
sorry.
Yeah, it was Don was Dawn, and then there's Don Don.
Yeah.
Don was the brother.
And he was actually Don Hall.
Yeah.
Hank and Don Hall, and then this is Don Granger Dawn, the female. But yeah, the other ones they announced were Telos. The villain from Convergence.
Yeah.
A series by Tom King, Carlo Pagayan.
Not Tom King, is it? The other guy?
No, it's Tom King.
Oh, he's going to do Telos too?
Apparently, yeah.
Wow.
Doing lots of stuff.
He's got like 6 gigs in the... And
got
one
a lot
at
of stuff
Marvel
getting
too, yeah.
Announced, yeah.
Yeah.
Superman, Lois, and Clark continues the story of the older versions of Superman and Lois Lane from Convergence, set 9 years in its future.
I want to watch that, but it sounds like they're really doing this Divergence thing. Like, it's really...
Yeah.
It's really this multiverse, and...
Yeah.
Continuity is going to be kind of weird to follow.
Right. That's Dan Jurgens and Lee Weeks. And yeah, Neil Adams heads up Coming of the Superman. The three new Superman fall somewhere between the Three Musketeers and Three Stooges. At the end, there's a big surprise. They take Superman's blood and they discover something about Superman. That's all I can tell you, but it describes it as all of Jack Kirby's characters fighting Superman.
Wow.
So who knows how the hell that will be. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting because I've been covering all those issues of the original Teen Titans on From Kid to Flash, and I never expected DC would be announcing a new series that would involve those characters like Nark and Mal,
yeah.
Mal Duncan and Lilith, because even those characters weren't even really used. Mal Duncan and Lilith weren't in Nark. They weren't even really used by Wolfman and Perez. I mean, they showed up a couple times, but those were the characters. They didn't really pick those characters. Those characters were kind of left behind.
Yeah, but they weren't that popular either.
Yeah.
He had a horn and a brown jumpsuit. Mal.
Yeah, later on, yeah. Mal, they didn't... He had a lot of identities. They didn't really know exactly what to do with him because when he didn't have any superpowers, and when he joined...
He had the horn.
Later. But when he first joined the team,
that's
was
the
just
one,
a normal
that's
human.
That's the one I know, is the one with the horn. That's like when I started to get Teen Titans. Like in the 25 cent, 30 cent range, you know, when Mal had the horn.
And he was also the Guardian for a while.
Yeah.
Or not really that long, really. But yeah, when he first joined the team, it was when they were,
he was given superpowers.
Young...
Yeah.
And so he didn't have any powers when he joined the team, or he didn't even have a superhero identity. Same with Lilith. They were just Mal and Lilith.
Right.
But they didn't really keep that identity for long where they weren't using their powers.
Yep.
So they went back to using their powers, and Mal and Lilith didn't really have superhero identities. Lilith had powers, but Mal... So then they kind of tried out different things for Mal to do, but...
Yeah, when he was even the Guardian in the Young Justice cartoon...
Because oh,
he was dating Bumblebee.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
Put them in.
And back then he didn't have an identity early on either. Before he became the Guardian, he was like Bumblebee was like more of, you know, the superhero, and he was kind of like, what do I do? And then he became the Guardian, and so yeah, that's cool. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, very interesting. It's interesting to see DC's changing things up.
I like this DC. I'm enjoying it more. And plus, you'll never believe this, Chris. I'm keeping caught up. I read every single DC comic, and I think there's only like six issues that I'm behind on right now, and that's just to, and I have till Wednesday to be caught up. So I am keeping caught up with the new DC.
Yeah, it's a good way of telling how excited you are about it.
Yeah, let's hope it stays that way.
I do like it better. I like it better than the New 52, to
I
be
do too.
honest.
It
It's more
feels
diverse.
more diverse, and it feels more like old is new. Like, how do I say it? Like, it has like the same sensibilities of what DC used to be.
It feels like they're
Even
trying
though,
to draw on their strengths more. Like they're
yeah, even
embracing the fact that they have this broad catalog of characters and they're trying to use them.
that's what I like. But it also feels more like it's not trying to be different just to be different. It's like, we know what we did well. Let's do it. Like, even with the Superman and Batman, they're totally different directions, but it still feels like home. At least to me, it does. Like Batman feels like Gotham Central, like Detective especially, and it's just like Harvey Bullock and Renee Montoya. I mean, come on, this is awesome. But yeah,
They're
I'm
also
really.
embracing change more too, though. I mean, they're like one of the things that I think was a failure about the New 52 was that it was really kind of it was directed too much at a narrow market. And I think that this new the DC right now, they're embracing newer styles and art and hiring younger writers that have a different approach.
Yeah, I
Something that
agree.
Marvel's been doing a little bit better than DC for a while now.
Yeah.
You know, some of these art style, like bringing in like Riley Rossimo and people like that, bringing in these indie creators that create books that, you know, really can kind of stand up with like some of the more innovative stuff happening at Image, you know. Like, did you read Constantine the
Yeah,
Hellblazer?
Ming Doyle. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that book was awesome. That's
Yeah.
like one of the best number ones I've read in a long time. Like in it, like totally, if it wasn't John Constantine, like that totally could have come out from Image, you know?
Yeah, it's felt like that.
So.
I do agree with it, but I think they're gonna lose a lot of people. They might gain some, but I see their market share. Like, I even saw the numbers for this, and they're getting their ass whooped by Marvel. Like, it's just a whooping. I as a reader am excited that they are being so diverse. Like, we're seeing like Omega Man, we're seeing like titles that we wouldn't normally see, like Prez. Do you know what I mean? There's like shit that is not even a viable property anymore, but they're making it that. They're trying to, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I'm excited. But let me jump into the next one. I went on, man, I go on these like ADD things where I like start getting something and then I get, oh, donut. But I got a full run of Stormwatch, and I already had like 1 through 7, volume one. Volume two is the one that's most popular. Volume one ran 50 issues, and towards the end, I think in the 40s, in the upper 40s, Warren Ellis came. And that's where it started to get it like its identity, at least its identity that people know today. And then it went into volume two, and then like 4 issues in, they introduced the Midnighter and Apollo, and that's where, you know, those characters took off in volume two. But this is volume one, and the Stormwatch is by Scott Clark and Travers Scott, and it's got a Jim Lee cover, and it was from, let's see, 1993. So, man, that was a long fucking time ago. Son of a bitch. This is like when I was graduating college. But that's probably around the time that I wasn't as big into every single title either. So it's probably why I didn't keep up with Stormwatch. But this is the story of like a Stormwatch is like a thing that like watches. It's like a UN organization that watches over the Earth, and they have like heroes that are from all around the world, kind of like a DC's Global Guardians, you know, like fire and ice. They were all like from Iceland, and they had people from every part of the country. That's what Stormwatch was. And this one had Battalion Diva. She's got like a Mexican type accent, and then there's somebody that's got an Irish accent. There's Hellstrike, and there's Fuji. I think he's Japan, obviously. Winter. They're what you call Stormwatch, and they're sent down to save a bus of children in Sarajevo or something like that, which is really weird. Well, it turns out that one of their buddies is trying to get this daughter across this border and keep her safe. And his name is Mr. Winsler, and he's a friend of Battalion's. And I guess he has to do with Stormwatch, and they're there to rescue Mr. Winsler and save this child, even though they have to rescue this whole bus. And they originally start fighting off this military, and then a band of evil guys that show up, which is Razor, Kilgore, Deathtrap, and Slayer. They show up to fight them, and they basically fight over this, and they end up losing their friend. He gets killed by Killstrike. And then it takes place later in the future, and he wakes up from the nightmare where he sees the death of his friend, and the police are at his door. This is Battalion, and a lady shows up. Her name is Christine Treelane, and they said the police are here with your brother. Like, they were going to arrest him, and he's like, "You can't do anything to my brother." And he says, "Well, your brother was caught during a robbery, and he should be sitting in jail." And he says, "You can't do anything to my brother. You understand this is under UN protocol. He has diplomatic immunity, and the cops have to leave." So he basically sent, even though his brother was in a robbery, he even tells his backstory, how they broke in to steal some TVs and stuff, and things had gone awry. And he told these guys to stop, and he tried to run the other direction, but he got caught up in this gunfight, and one of the guys actually shot a cop, or shot at a cop, and he got killed. And then he showed up here. So he's got like a brother that's just causing him trouble, even though he's a member of a team. The other thing that this does that's really interesting is it talks about Skywatch and how Skywatch links in other organizations. Like, they mention like Youngblood, you know, the Youngblood Strike Team is also launched out of here.
All
It
right.
talks about how Supreme is also launched out of there, and EVA, and all kinds of other organizations that are in space watching the Earth. So it's like a continuity thing where, you know, Skywatch is kind of like Jim Lee's thing, and Youngblood is Rob Liefeld's thing. It was kind of an interesting thing how they were integrating it. And they have this guy. Do you remember that guy in Cloud City? Was his name Lambot or Lobot? Do you remember that guy that used to always walk around with Lando with the computer thing around his?
Oh, right, yeah.
I always forget his name.
Lobot sounds right to me.
Lobot, Lambot. It's one of the two. But there's a guy on there on the platform there, and he's like Skywatch, and he looks like that. And he's like, has all of these guys hooked up to computers, and they're analysts, and they're monitoring the entire Earth. And then he's tapped into every analyst, so he could see the entire world in his head. Do you know what I mean? And they're like saying, well, there's a nuclear deck. They're like monitoring everything. There's like a nuclear detonation in Russia. Should we send somebody? And he says, no, it's in Chernobyl. Should I alert Stormwatch 1? And he says, no, not yet. Just let the local people deal with it first, and then we'll launch somebody if we need to. But then they're at the funeral for a Battalion's friend, and then those other mercenaries show up to fight at the cemetery and try to take out Battalion. And Battalion doesn't have his armor, so he can't like channel his energy very well. And that Killstrike guy actually shoots his brother, and it looks like they're going to kill his brother, or they're there to capture the brother, and that one woman, Christine, says, "Should I activate him? I guess his brother is has powers too." And he says, "No, don't activate him. Don't activate him." And she touches him and activates him, so he gets powers, and we don't know what those powers are, and that's how it ends. But it was pretty cool.
Nice.
And this is a time when Death Blow was coming out by Jim Lee and Brandon Choi and Union by Mark Teixeira. So this is the time when Pitt was guest starring in Cyber Force on Cyber Force number 3. So it's like, yeah, it's I was around this time and I didn't get all the titles, but man, my completionism wants to complete all the Image early stuff too. I'm insane.
Yeah, that was right around when I stopped collecting comics for a while. I
Yeah.
think that came out right around. I remember seeing that cover, that first issue. I might have even had that, or my friend did, or something. It was just right around that time.
It was a lot of fun. And it was weird too because I read right after. Okay, this is this is 1993. And I read right after it, or soon after it, I read Bloodstrike, the new one by Rob Liefeld, the one that just came out this week. And it felt like a 90s book. So it was like just continuing the same flavor, you know, which was kind of cool because I dug it, you know, I was in the mood for it. So, and Bloodstrike is kind of like a knockoff of really the properties that he created for Marvel. Like the main Bloodstrike himself is like Deadpool. And the other guy, I forget what his name, he's like Cable. I think his name is Calbot or something like that. He's Cable. So
It's like
it's an interesting thing. It's to see, and I enjoyed it for what it was. I really did. But I was excited. I wanted to keep reading the Stormwatch, but then I was like, man, I gotta keep reading the current stuff to stay on top too. So maybe I'll save the next one for next week, you know.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how long you stay current.
Yeah. I have to because I'm staying current on DC, but I'm like really like I didn't used to get all the Marvel and now I'm getting all the Marvel and it's like a fire hose, man. It's like I'm not even caught up on Secret Wars. I've read a handful and what I've read I've liked. But if I have a preference, I'd rather read DC. Just because of the universe and the history and the characters, it's not that one's better than the other. It's for me, it's just that I prefer that company and the history of it. I'd rather read a bad DC than a good Marvel, just because I want to know. It's a weird philosophy, but
No, you follow the
I
universe.
want to know everything. Yeah, I want to.
Yeah.
No, even if it's in a different universe, I want to know about it. So I would recommend it. It's a fun series. If you get a chance to pick it up in a dollar bin or you do have it, you know, I would try it, see if you if it
It's interesting because one of the things, speaking of, one of the things I did, I don 't know, maybe like 7 years later or something, when I got back into comics, one of the things that I did read was a lot of the early Authority.
You know
Because
what? I
that
just
was hot at the time.
I didn't buy that either. And I just it's funny that you mentioned shit and it just triggers something in my brain. But I just bought the full run.
Did you? Yeah, that was hot at the time, and I was coming back to comics as someone that had read a lot of Marvel, but I was interested in just looking at reviews online, seeing what was hot and what was getting good reviews, and just trying stuff. And so I ended up reading a bunch of Authority because that was pretty hot at the time. That's really kind of how I got into DC, because I just was like, well, I'll try out some DC comics that are getting good reviews. Because I think I've mentioned before that I started reading comics again because the first X-Men movie was coming out. And I tried the new X-Men comic at the time, or not new X-Men, but I tried the X-Men's that were coming out at the time, and it's like, oh, these are okay, but I do like the idea of reading comics again, so let me see what else is out here. So, but anyway, speaking of DC, I've been picking up some Showcase Presents volumes because I don't have a lot of them, so I've been trying to like build up a little bit of a library of them, especially the ones that reprint Silver Age stuff. Not so much, because those are more expensive to get in the original copies and stuff. So, mostly focusing on the Silver Age reprints and looking at what reprints the oldest material. And one of the oldest, at least the year that the reprint started in, is Superman Family. Superman Family Volume 1 is pretty much all reprints of Superman's Pal, Jimmy Olsen. I know later volumes start to mix in the Lois Lane series also when that starts. But this, but I read the first issue. I got this recently. I read the first issue in here, which is Jimmy Olsen number one, which has a September, October 1954 date, cover date. Written by Otto Binder with art by Kurt Swan and Ray Burnley. And it actually has three short stories in it. the first one's called The Boy of a Thousand Faces. And one of the things I like about Silver Age DC is it just kind of makes me smile. Definitely a different mood, and these stories made me laugh in a good way. The story starts out with Jimmy Olsen. He's in disguise as an ice cream salesman. He's riding a bike that has the ice cream bars, Happy Smile ice cream bars, in a container in the front of the bike. And he's just, because he's in disguise, he just goes flying past a woman and a bunch of kids that want to buy ice cream. She's like, "Well, you don't want my business." But he's flying past her because he wants to go. He's using the disguise to follow these men that he thinks are like connected mafia guys. But he's paying such close attention to them that he almost runs into the back of a car and gets their attention. So then he just tries to pretend to give them free samples of the ice cream. And they just laugh at him. He said, "Have it yourself." And the one guy grabs the ice cream and just smashes it into his face. So then he can't see where he's going. So he rides the bike into traffic because he's got ice cream all over his face. And thankfully, I don't know if this is an indication for the rest of the series, but Superman's pretty much just always saving his ass. And so Superman luckily is flying overhead, and his super hearing hears screeching brakes and figures somebody must be in trouble. So he swoops down just in time before Jimmy gets run over by a truck and like grabs the whole bike and lifts it up into the air. It's like, just in time, lad. Wait, why? It's Jimmy Olsen. And so then he sets him back down, and he talks to him. Said, "Still working in your spare time on the Vickers jewel robbery? Any luck?" So then later at the Daily Planet, he's trying to fight for the story that he's doing, even though it's dangerous. And Lois and Clark are telling him to be careful. Perry White's telling him, he's like, "You can't do this on your own, but if you're insisting, do it your own way." And then, so Jimmy at this time, he's got his signal watch so that he can press it, and it gives Superman the message that he needs is help. So he's thinking to himself, the reason they're so concerned is they don't know that I have this signal watch that Superman will come and save me if I get in trouble. So there's a flying newsroom that the Daily Planet has, and it's this helicopter, and inside the helicopter there's all this like there's like a file cabinet and a prop in disguise trunk and a bunch of books and everything like that. So while it's flying to this location, Jimmy gets into this other disguise where he's got like a nice jacket and but he's like a door-to-door salesman, and he goes up to these crooks and tries to sell them, pretends to try to sell them dishwashing materials and stuff, and they're like, he's like, well, you surely have some dirty dishes you want to, I can give you a free demonstration. And they're like, oh, okay, sure. And then they just put him in the kitchen. There's just this huge, huge pile of dishes, and he just gets stuck doing the dishes. But the story goes on. He gets recognized, and he's trying to escape. But then the crooks end up tying him to the docks with the pilot of the helicopter or the newsroom, and they're gonna get drowned when the waves come to shore. But fortunately, he can start. He grabs a seashell that comes floating by, and he uses it to cut the ropes that are holding him, and that allows him to get his signal watch. And he gets the signal to Superman in time that the Superman flies in and grabs him and the pilot and saves them before the docks collapse and he drowns. And they end up getting the evidence to get the crooks. The second story is called Case of the Lumberjack Jinx, and Perry White calls their supplier of paper. So we're not getting enough pulpwood to make our paper stock. What's wrong up there at the lumber mill? And the guy that's working there tells him that there's a jinx, which Perry thinks is ridiculous, but he's like, all right, well, I'll send Jimmy to check this out. And Jimmy's real excited about the assignment. And he goes undercover as Jimmy Wayne to come help out. And he's like, chop this little tree down first. You can work up to the big ones later. And it's like this humongous tree. So, of course, the Jinx turns out to be people that are sabotaging stuff. And soon enough, they're going after Jimmy too, because apparently they try to scare away anybody that goes to work there. And there's these logs that collapse off of a truck that goes driving by, and Superman ends up coming in and convincing the guy that's up to all of it that was pretending that was causing the jinxes, that is this guy that if he was able to cause a forest fire, he would collect on his insurance, but the evidence of the diseased timber that so it's basically like the people that are running the camp themselves, they actually were in a situation where their timber was diseased by these beetles that attacked, but so they were trying to make it look like that they were under attack, even though they were the ones that were doing, they were worried they were going to actually collect on the insurance, but then all the evidence would also be destroyed that their timber was bad. So Superman flies Jimmy Olsen back to the Daily Planet and tells him, you've got a story to write up, junior reporter, and don't forget to give yourself full credit. I didn't help you at all. So the final story in the issue, it's probably my favorite. It's called The Man of Steel Substitute. And apparently, Jimmy gets a lot of calls at the Daily Planet because it's known that he's friends with Superman. So he's people are always calling him and saying, you know, when you see Superman, could you have him help me with this? And he's got a pad that says "Request for Superman's help," and it says, "Find lost dog, dig a well, change flat tire, mind a cranky baby, paint a house, save a tree dog." He said, "Man, Superman doesn't have time to do all this stuff. He'd never get to the big jobs like he's doing right now in the Alps." And you know, Superman's actually up in the Alps digging out villages that got buried in an avalanche from a blizzard and stuff. And then there's this guy, he actually shows up with a safe in a wheelbarrow, and says, and Jimmy's saying, "Sorry, sir, I can't ask Superman to fly back to Metropolis and rip open your safe just because you forgot the combination." And but then there's this bridge construction that's going on outside of town, and there's the bridge contractor comes. And he's talking to the foreman, and he says the steel company warned its customers that a defective batch of girders was shipped. But luckily, Superman promised to come out and check the ones that you've got with his X-ray vision, and that'll save us a lot of time. But Superman better show up soon because we're losing time, and the gang of our workmen are getting restless and stuff. And so this time, when somebody calls Jimmy, the foreman calls Jimmy. He said, "Man, he tries to use his signal watch, and there's too much static to get through. So he's like, I got to come up with some plan, to help Superman out." So he goes, Jimmy goes to his home, and it's like at home, Jimmy's room proves how he idolizes his super pal, and he's got like a life-size Superman. Like, I don't even know if it's a cutout. Yeah, it's like a life-size Superman cutout, and he's got all this Superman memorabilia and Superman articles cut out on the wall, and there's a picture of him and Superman to Jimmy Olsen from Superman, and then he splices together certain scenes from his Superman movie reels, and then he connects that with key phrases from tape recordings of his voice. And then there's a panel. He's like, "What is Jimmy up to?" And he comes out. He's actually wearing a Superman costume. He's like, "I'm lucky I had this suit made once for a costume party. Let's see there. I look just like Superman." Well, almost. So he goes and he gets dropped off on this cliff site that's nearby the construction of the bridge. And he sets up a movie camera and he projects it on the wall. And to make the workmen think that it's Superman's shadow as he's approaching. Well, this he actually, he's, before he sets up the camera, he does this part with a paper doll that he cut out of Superman, that and he's putting it on a convex telescope lens to cast it onto the wall. But then he uses the movie camera to project the picture of Superman on the wall as well, like he's getting closer. And he's got this huge fan that he uses to put a swoosh of the familiar whoosh of Superman zooming through the air. And then he goes out himself in his Superman costume. He puts on a black wig. And he's at far enough of a distance. And he uses the tape recording that he made of Superman's voice and plays it. So from a distance, they think it actually is Superman. And then the last thing he does is he has a inflated balloon of Superman that was used in a parade. And he lets it off in the wind so it looks like Superman's flying away. But then danger happens because he sees a couple of men standing under the bridge and a girder slips loose, and he's doesn't want the men to get hurt, so he shouts, "Look out, men, girder falling." And so they jump out of the way in time, and they're like, "Oh, Superman saved us." And they said, "Wait a minute, that wasn't Superman's voice." And so Jimmy's like, "Oh crap." So he starts to try to run away because he's still standing on the cliff, and his Superman cape gets caught on a branch, and so it rips down the back of his costume. And they're like, "That wasn't Superman up there at all." And then the balloon that he sent out, everything's going wrong. The balloon that he sent out at the end ends up flying down, and like it's just this deflated Superman balloon that lands on one of the guys' backs. So then the bridge really starts to fall apart, and fortunately, Superman turns out to actually be in the crowd of men, like in disguise. He's got like a jacket and a hat on, and so he reveals himself and he flies up and catches the beam that's starting to fall, and then he takes a bag, or it takes a bucket of rivets, and starts high speed hammering the rivets into the bridge with his fist. And the last couple panels tells you that Superman explains that when he arrived a little late, he saw what Jimmy was doing, and he didn't want to humiliate him by giving up the deception, so he thought he'd see let Jimmy try to pull off what he was trying to do to help him. And the last panel, Superman sees a good buddy. He comes in, and Jimmy's pretty upset. He says, "Superman, you're calling off our friendship, of course, because I had less faith in your promise than those men. You must be plenty angry at my silly stunt." And Superman says, "Angry? Why, Jimmy, the truest test of friendship is wanting to help a friend in trouble, as I seem to be. Gosh, kid, you're still tops with me." And Jimmy says, "I'm still Superman's pal? Super duper." So, talk about a different era. But I don't know, I found them
Actually,
entertaining.
you're that's the golden age too.
Yeah, this is kind of like the like a it, yeah, it is still kind of more the
That's the
like
'50s, so
later golden age.
1963 is the silver, so
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this is
got a ways to go.
pre.
It has a lot of Silver Age sensibility, though.
Yeah, because this is kind of transition in time when, you know,
It
Superman was still being published, but.
yeah, I just read Archie number one, and the interesting thing about Archie number one is I never read any Golden Age Archie, and Archie number one has, the new Archie, and then at the end Mark Waid says, well, we're going to throw in this extra, which is Pep Comics, whatever, which is Archie's first appearance. And it was it, it's it, it's interesting because it sounds like an issue. I mean, if you read it's kind of like an issue of Jimmy Olsen without Superman.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, one other thing. So this volume goes up to 1957.
Yeah.
And it also has a bonus story from at the end from Superman number 28 from 1944 of Lois Lane's first appearance.
Yeah.
But I thought it was an interesting note, and at the bottom of the table of content it says, "The stories, characters, and incidents featured in this publication are entirely fictional. This publication contains material that was originally created during a less racially sensitive time in our society and reflects attitudes that may be interpreted as offensive today. The stories are reprinted here without alteration for historical reference."
It makes sense.
No, it does. I
So
think it's,
it's basically
yeah.
saying if you don't understand what the racial sensitivities were at the time and
Right.
this shocks you, this is why.
Right, yeah.
It's th things have changed, and sometimes they haven't changed for the better. Like it's still stuff going on, you know what I mean? So it's a good statement to, 'cause some people read stuff and they just don't realize what they're reading.
Yeah. And
Just
I
like if you
rather
read
than
Old Spirit or
right.
Old National Comics, there's racial stuff in there. And it is an historical thing to read it. It's a reflection of that time of how people were looked upon,
Yeah.
good or bad, right? I mean,
Yeah, and I would rather they make this stuff available like they say, for historical purposes.
Yeah, I would not want them to edit stuff out because
No.
that's I want to read stuff as it was originally shown. That's like getting a reading Huckleberry Finn and having something edited out, you know.
Yeah.
It's not the real story.
Right. Yeah, and I and part of my in, you know, part of my interest in reading these is I wouldn't read them if they were totally boring. I mean, I'm amused by them and they make me smile and it's funny to see these characters and at a different time. And then also it's the historical interest too, you know. What kind of stories were people entertained by at the time and how are these characters represented? I mean, one of the things that keeps me interested in superhero comics from DC and Marvel is the history. You know, like what other like there's not many other mediums that you could go to where you can see one character that has been represented over such a long period of time and how that reflects the culture at the time, you know.
It's such a
And
weird thing too that DC would have something like Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen or Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane because it's not a
yeah.
superhero. Do you know what I mean? It's like a comic book about the side character.
Yeah,
And
I
it
mean the
had a
very
long run.
fact.
It must have been popular because it ran for a long time.
Right. Yeah, just to show tastes in
It had to
comics.
have, you know, some viability to it if they lasted forever. It would be interesting to talk to somebody back then, like, and just understand, well, what did you like? Do you know what, you know, what did you like to pick up off the shelf?
Yeah, I mean, 'cause these comics are a
That
couple
comic's
years.
expensive. I mean,
Oh, I'm sure it
that's a
is.
5 grand comic and very fine, you know, at least. And if you go into near mint, you're tripling it. But
Yeah.
I don't think you'd ever find that comic in near mint. I just don't
Oh,
think it
man.
exists. Even though I think they're more lenient towards older books, like the grading changes, than if it's a modern book.
But I like the art. It's black. It's showcased, obviously, so it's black and white. But I like the Kurt Swan art. You know, it.
Did it look like Kurt Swan art? The
You
barrel
know.
chest or Superman or
Oh yeah, I mean he's Superman is very like square jawed, barrel chest. Like, you know, he's a very like manly man, like 50s looking man. You
And
know.
how did Jimmy look at that time? Scrawny or just
Yeah.
full?
He definitely looks young. He's the cub reporter, you know, he's like definitely looks young and youthful and freckled face, you know. Definitely no muscles. Just you know, like thin, kind of scrawny, you know, he wears a bow tie a lot. Kind of dorky, you know. But I like the I think I guess I'm just kind of a fan of that DC art style. You know, it's criticized for kind of like having a house style. Some people don't like that, but I also like Mike Sikowski's art from like the early Justice League and stuff. There's just something about it that's real clean and realistic, but with like a tinge of cartooniness to it. And it reproduces really well in black and white. Both Kurt Swan and Mike Sikowski's art, I think, looks pretty good. And, 'cause I have like the first couple Justice League of America volumes too, and they look pretty good.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, that leads me to my last book, and that is going to be Deathstroke number 58.
Ah.
This is the most expensive Deathstroke book you could seek out outside of Teen Titans, his first appearance. I don't know why, other than it's a short print run and it's got Joker on the cover. But it's by Marv Wolfman and Alan Caldwell and Tom Grinberg on pencils. And I was really fascinated by this one, from a historical perspective, because Deathstroke is a character that I followed in Teen Titans, and I followed maybe the first 10 issues of his solo series, and then I dropped off, and I recently just bought his whole series with the exception of this issue, and I'm only missing 2 issues left. I got an annual to get and one more issue, which shouldn't be hard to get because it's not expensive. And then I have the complete run of Deathstroke the Terminator. But this issue, like on eBay, if you go search for him, he's very rare to show up, and he's going for like 32, between 25 and 50 bucks, depending on where you look. So it's, you don't see that in the price guide, but it might be a speculator price or something that's driving it. I think in this case it's low print run and the fact that it's Joker. But from an historical perspective, this is a fascinating issue. It's absolutely fascinating because if you're reading the current Deathstroke, they sort of de-aged him to make him more like the Arrow TV show. And what's absolutely fascinating about this is prior to this issue, maybe a few issues back, they made Deathstroke immortal and they also de-aged him. And now he doesn't, like, he kind of doesn't remember. He knows that he was who he was, but he doesn't remember all the details. He has to actually talk to Wintergreen a lot to try to remember things, you know?
Interesting. I didn't realize that happened.
I didn't either. That's why it's fascinating. He's got a new costume. It looks totally different. It looks all like all dark blue. And one of the side where he has the eye that's not covering his, I mean, it has his good eye on. It's like a lighter blue, like a Blue Beetle blue. It's a very interesting. And then he's got like gray pants. It's a darker costume. It's very unusual. But this story is very, very interesting. It starts with a flash forward where Deathstroke is getting his ass kicked by not the Joker, but the Joker has these guys that are kind of like dressed like the Ace of Spades, but it's not that group. It's not the what are they called? The Royal Flesh Gang. It's not the Royal Flesh Gang. It's like Joker's got these henchmen in armor that have like a diamond, and then one has like a spade on it, and one has a heart, and they all have weapons and chains and lasers, and they're kicking his ass. And the Joker's kind of there and actually throws him into the water. And that's where you learn that with one of his own henchmen, he's sacrificing one of his own henchmen to kill Deathstroke. And that's where you get the flashback of this story. And the story is really set up really good. It takes a mayor in Detroit, Michigan. Has a daughter, and for some reason this daughter wrote to the Joker while he was in the asylum and asked, you know, what causes you to do what you do, and just asked him a lot of questions. Well, the Joker became fascinated with this mayor's daughter and actually killed the grandmother first, which is really creepy. Is the Joker contaminated the blood supplies that were feeding hospitals. So it was like an outbreak, and what he wanted is for the mayor to give up his daughter, and the mayor not want to give up his daughter to the Joker. And there's more stuff that's driving this story because this mayor is corrupt, and the Joker knows it. But until that happens, he's going to keep the blood supply. So all the hospitals have all these people dying, and all these people die with small grins on their face. So they're trying to get like new blood supplies into the hospitals because people need transfusions and all that stuff. They need blood. A lot of people are dying. The daughter eventually gets captured by Well, the mayor hires Deathstroke to protect his daughter, and the Joker manages to get the daughter anyway, which is pretty interesting. And he starts talking to the daughter, and he's like, "I'm not gonna hurt you," even though he's telling the mayor otherwise. And the mayor's trying to get his daughter back, and he has Deathstroke going after him. And he hired Deathstroke because he went to Batman originally, and Batman's like, I guess Batman wouldn't help him, and he wanted somebody like Deathstroke who wouldn't put him into the asylum, but who would kill him. So he hired Deathstroke, and it's a really really cool issue. There was a lot of cool like things historically that I guess I just didn't realize were going on at the time, especially with Deathstroke. And Deathstroke faces off with the Joker, and he has the opportunity to actually kill him, but Joker actually takes out Deathstroke, which is pretty cool, because he shoots out this like he pulls a knife, but the knife shoots out these little quills, and they actually knock out Deathstroke. Like he could kill him, but Joker didn't want him to kill him. He put him to sleep essentially, and the mayor took the daughter away from his wife because his wife had cheated on him. That's another unique thing about them, because you don't usually see that happen. But he kind of blackmailed the woman after she had an affair, and she had to give full custody rights of the daughter to the husband. And the husband was corrupt, and the daughter knew it, and that's why she started writing these letters to the Joker, and the Joker found out about it. But it ended up that the mother got the daughter back at the end, and the mayor went to prison. So what makes this story interesting is the Joker was the hero in this whole story. It's
Yeah,
awesome.
really.
Yeah,
That's different.
it's very different. It's fascinating. And then in the back, this is cool. This is cool because the internet. What year was this? This is 1996. This is just fascinating stuff. This is a letter this person's writing. It says, "Dear Carrie, I'm writing in regard to the comment made by a reader of this magnificent book. In issue number 54, a Mr. Chris Conley made it known that he did not appreciate the fact that Slade is immortal, and then he threatened not to subscribe to the book if this fact was not changed." And then this person goes on, this Al guy goes on to say, "Well, Mr. Conley is entitled to his own opinion, but if he had really seen Slade for the kind of person he is, he would see the endless possibilities of pain and pleasure that Slade would have to endure. For some of us, this pain and pleasure will only exist for as long as we exist, and it is not what we encounter, but how we handle our encounters that makes life interesting. In closing, I would like to take the time to say I have enjoyed reading the following Slade through his travels. This book means a great deal to me. I've started college around the time of the first issue was released, and I will be graduating in this May. Although I will be leaving college shortly, I will never stop purchasing this title." That's pretty cool. I like that letter, because it was a letter responding to a whiner.
Yeah, it shows you not all that much has changed.
Yeah, it's what's new is old, and it's just a different way of saying it, as people are probably actually writing letters back in this time period.
Yeah. The difference is that it took more time to write the letter and send it, so
You were more careful on what you said,
yeah.
and
You had to think about
you
it.
had to think about it instead of it being instantaneous, you know?
And you had time to change your mind.
Yeah.
Say, yeah, maybe I won't mail that.
This person says, "Thank God you changed the Deathstroke's costume at long last. I do hope the change is permanent. It's also nice to see that Pat Trice is still alive and well." But this person likes the change of the costume. I personally do not like this costume. If you get a chance, Google it. It is not a good look for Deathstroke, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I feel like vaguely like I might have seen it at some point in passing, but I don't really recall it.
I am going to post a pic of it on the Geek Brunch Facebook page. If any of our listeners are interested to it, I'm going to take a picture right now, and I'll let you get to your next book.
All right. Oh, I heard the shot being taken.
Yeah, there you go.
Wakum.
Whoop whoop.
No.
I had the volume on in case Bill Bomer texted me, but I usually have it on vibrate.
To tell you this, kids are using the internet.
No, to see if we were recording or not.
Yeah.
And we're not, so.
Oh.
Which could be good, because I got grass to mow. I just don't know if I can make it in the heat. Like, it was cool a little bit ago, and it's starting to heat up, but
yeah,
it's going to take me a while because we were gone last weekend, and last weekend I should have mowed, so it had another extra week to grow.
Yeah, I got to cut the grass, too. All right, the last thing I read was... Man, I've covered the gamut. I had an indie, a DC, and now I'm going to talk about a Marvel. I didn't even do that on purpose.
And I did it too.
Oh, yeah.
I did an Image, an indie, I did a Marvel, and I did a DC.
Wow, look at us.
Not on purpose.
Yeah, we're diverse. We don't even try. So this was Fantastic Four, issue 24. I don't know if I'm totally getting back into where I'm reading the 60s Marvel. I had taken a break from it, and I read a couple issues this week, but I don't know if I'll keep doing it or not. Who knows which way the wind will blow.
The best bet for you is to read it when you're in the mood for it.
Yeah, that's
because that's
I'll do,
when you're gonna get the maximum enjoyment out of it.
Yeah,
that's why I change things up all the time.
Yeah, me too. So, this story is called The Infant Terrible. Of course, it's by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And it has a pretty amusing introduction because there's reporters that are there reporting on the Fantastic Four. And so they're all showing off and like they're all excited about getting their picture taken. And when it starts off, they're taking pictures of Reed Richards, and he's got himself all flattened out, but then the Torch says, "Yay, it's my turn now," and the reporter says, "No, Torch, we've already photographed you. We'll concentrate on your sister now." So the Fantastic Four, all four of them, are really looking for the fame, I guess. They really want the attention, and Sue's soaking it up. One guy says, "Tell me, Miss Storm, has anyone ever told you you're beautiful? Once or twice, boys, and why don't you call me Sue?" And this other guy's, "This is an interview we're going to like." So they're like, "Why don't you show us how you turn invisible? Although it's a shame to hide any of you, even for a little while." And so she makes the bottom half of her body go invisible, and then she makes the top go invisible. Says, "Now I'll just have my legs remain visible. Can you see them, boys?" "We sure can," sigh. But then meanwhile, like the things in the background, he's like, "Look at how I can squeeze all these phone books together with my hands. Isn't this awesome?" And like, "Oh, look, I can crush them all together into a pulp." And they're not even paying attention to him. And finally, the reporters end up all just running out of the place, and their things falling after them. "Don't you want to take any more pictures of me? I can even sell you an autograph or two." But something's going on at Times Square. That's why a lot of the reporters took off, because they want to go cover what's going on in Times Square. So the Fantastic Four get into their fantastic jet, and they start flying into towards Times Square, but they end up flying into this thing that looks like a floating milk bottle, and they get trapped in there. And Johnny's able to burn right out of it pretty easily. But then they go into Times Square, and there's this weird giant spinning top. It looks like a child's toy, with, but it has spikes on it and stuff. And looks like it's going to spin into a crowd. So all this weird stuff happens. There's this green robot that appears, and Ben punches it, and then two more are there. And he just gets more and more frustrated, keeps punching this robot, and it keeps causing more and more and more to appear. It's just like this panel that takes up most of the page where the thing is standing there, and then there's just these two columns down, like either side of the street, of just these green robots because he's been kept pumped punching them. So finally, this creature shows up. That's this little green alien with looks like antennae, but they're like on his head, but they're more like sprouts or spouts rather, and he's got purple costume on. And he shoots these rays from his antennae, and a lot of the stuff that's been happening turns out to be illusions that he's causing by shooting, that he powers by shooting his rays out of these spouts on his head. And he uses it to create this spout that pours out, like he makes his own soda fountain. He sits down, he's eating this this sundae while Sue tries to sneak up on him on while she's invisible, and all these reporters are trying to get close to take a picture of him. And when he sees that the reporters are getting coming at him, he blasts them all out away. And the photographers are safe, but he starts just shooting his rays indiscriminately because he's freaking out, and they shoot into all the way into outer space and hit a passing meteor storm, and so that which causes the meteors to fly into the Earth's atmosphere and start raining down on New York City. So, they figure out that this character, whatever kind of alien is, he's actually must be a infant because of the way that he's acting. That he's an infant of his race. And so these mobsters, they see this creature on TV and they think that, oh, maybe he's got something to do with. Maybe we can make use of him. So this guy, Big Joe, they go and they pick up this alien. They get him in the back of their cab by offering him sweets and ice cream and stuff. And they take him, and they want to use him to, use his power against them. And they do take him out, and they draw pictures for him to communicate with him, and they take him to this armed car, and they use him to lift up the armed car and shake it out, and all this these bags of money and stuff, and the crooks are super excited. But then this one of the crooks picks up this big bag of money, and then the alien turns it into a pig, and then he makes the other bags that the other guy is holding sprout wings and fly away. And another one, he's got his money, he's got his hands full of stacks of dollar bill or $100 bills, and it turns into mud, and the alien kid is just cracking up. So they try once more, and he says, "Hey, look at this. Look at this little sparkler, and it's actually a diamond." He says, "Can you make it bigger for me?" And it works. It turns into this huge diamond, but the alien further makes it turn into a egg that hatches a duck. So finally, the Fantastic Four show up, and they take out the gangsters pretty easily over a few pages, and then approach the alien, who's pretty freaked out at this point. by everything that's going on and the way that these other humans have used him. So while the three others try to keep the alien from hurting anybody else and also fend off the things that he's sending at them, Reed goes back to the headquarters and he sets up this ultrasonic radio transmitter and he tunes it up. And basically, what he does is he uses it to contact the aliens' people. Just when things are getting really, really bad, and the aliens causing panic in the streets and stuff, a flying saucer appears and the parents of the alien kid come and get him. Stop, you must do no more, you must come with me. And they grab him and take him away. And there's a little meeting between the Fantastic Four and the parents of the alien that come. They kind of like say goodbye to him. So it's just a frightened little child, and there's a message at the end in a sense where if any of us gets too vain, too conceited because of our power, let's remember the infant terrible, the innocent waif from space who might have unwittingly destroyed us all. The end. So it has its amusing moments. It wasn't one of the best issues so far of Fantastic Four. That's definitely a plot I've seen, but looks like there's some good ones coming up. The next one has the Hulk, one of the first Hulk versus the Thing battles, and then the Avengers show up in issue 26. So some a little bit more relevant, because I don't think this creature, this alien creature, or that ra this race that he's from has really been used much before. But
Or you mean again, right?
yes, I do.
Yeah.
But also before. And that is it for I.
Right. Well, that's it for me too. So this has been a another episode of Geek Brunch Retrocast. We got two episodes of Buck Rogers, one of which I know I have. The other
Yeah.
one I'm not too sure. But and then we'll I guess me and you will just be once we get to that point, I guess we'll figure out what to do. Maybe we'll do a movie just to bridge it, you know?
Yeah, we could
Just
do a
to bridge it or do something else.
or each pick a movie or something,
Yeah,
do a
yeah.
couple episodes. We don't have to start another big project right away.
Yeah, give us some time to think about it. And, 'cause it is an investment.
Yeah.
Or at
But like
least
I
know how to limit the investment.
Right, I do kind of like your idea. I'll definitely be thinking about your idea of maybe not jumping into a whole series, but doing, and then if we want to keep watching it on our own, we always could.
Right. Doing the first disc of a series or whatever, 'cause
Something like that.
if we bought a series or something, then we can, like you said, we can continue it 'cause we own it, right?
Right.
But yeah, that'd be cool.
Ain't nobody gonna tell us not to.
That's right.
Or if they do, it's tough.
Yep. Tough shit. So what are you gonna
So,
go do the rest of the day?
I might cut the grass.
That's what we'll be doing together, just in different states, time
Yeah.
zones.
Possibly. I don't know if I'll do the whole thing or do half another half tomorrow or something, or
I
but
have to do the whole thing. I'm bagging and boarding Archie variants right now. I bought every single one of them.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I did order it. I think I just got the Fiona Staples cover because I
That's
really
a.
like her
I
art.
really think it's the best cover.
Yeah.
Like if I had to choose one cover, there are a few that I really like, but if I had to choose one cover, I think I'd do that one.
Yeah, it looked like there's some other good ones, but I like, I mean, it's a cool idea that they're doing a new line of stuff, but it was the kind of the creative team. I mean, I like Mark Waid a lot, and I also really love Fiona Staples, so they kind of sold me on it. It gave me that extra push to
It's a really good issue. I
pick it up.
liked it.
Nice.
Hopefully you'll like it as much as I did.
Hopefully.
All right, you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, and our Twitters are at MythMakingETC and at Mike Myers Brunch, which I usually do a Periscope daily, if not 3 or 4 times a day on a weekend. But if
that's offensive.
Yeah.
Very offensive.
It is. I saw the trailers and I just loved them, man. I don't know why I get so emotional, but it struck a chord with me, both of them. So,
the love is true.
Yeah. So, let's see, mythmakingetc@gmail.com if you want to send an email. Thank you for sending us the list of questions to our friend
Brian
and Comics and History. Check out his podcast. And what else do I got? Mike@comicbooknoise.com is my email. And on our Facebook page, you could just look under Geek Brunch Podcast, which you will go, if you go right now and look at it, you will see the Deathstroke costume that I'm talking about. So every time we talk about something specific, I guess we could post it on the site so people could see what we were talking about. But
yeah, as long as we remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the fly, yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I have ever seen that costume.
Yeah, I don't.
Very monochromatic.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't know why, but it looks like it's like a mercenary, like a military costume.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got like these weird plates on the knees and shins. Do you see that?
Yeah.
It's kind
the ones
of
on his shoulders look like little hubcaps.
Yeah.
Or like he's like a transformer. He can.
Yeah. What's purpose does it serve?
Like bend his arms back, and those will be his little wheels to ride on. He's also got one on his crotch. That's kind of a funny crotch. He's got like a cup.
Yeah, it's like well, it's smart.
An exterior cup. It's not a bad idea. It looks kind of funny.
Looks funny, but if I was a superhero, I think I'd want to protect the crotch.
That's true. It's... There should be a lot more crotch protection in superheroes.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of pressure you'd have to apply to, like, kick Superman in the balls, right?
Yeah, I guess maybe the rest of them would
Do you
be.
Actually ever think about that? Like, if you were to take out Superman, the weak part of a male anatomy is the balls, and we know Superman probably has balls. So, and he's not human, but you'd imagine that the anatomy is very similar.
Yeah,
I've always assumed
would
you have to apply to hit, you know, the balls?
Yeah, I never directly thought about it, but I guess I've always assumed that his anatomy is the same.
Yeah,
or like Luke Cage, you know.
Luke Cage, yeah, Luke Cage,
unbreakable.
Hit him on the balls, but I would assume like Batman would prepare because he's a smart guy. He would prepare to have protection in his ball area.
Yeah, and plus he's just got a normal wiener.
Yeah, he's got a normal wiener.
A human.
Well,
one.
I'm sure that he has trained one. His wiener to its maximum.
Yes. It's normal, but it's also it's the pinnacle of penis potential.
That's right. It's at least trained properly.
Yes.
All right, on that note, well, you have a good week, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, adios.
Bye-bye.
Oh, no more, oh, no, no, I'll be your golden boy. Bigger, 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 b